Director Storm.
Here.
Vice President Wright.
Here.
President Baltimore.
Here.
Thank you.
All right. Legal counsel, can we have the report out of closed session?
Yes. At 6 p.m. this evening, the board went into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.D1 regarding existing litigation. They heard a report from legal counsel in regards to the groundwater adjudication and gave direction. They did not hear any sort of report in regards to the bankruptcy. The board also went into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957. They discussed the conclusion of the general manager's evaluation, and I don't know if they discussed the district legal counsel's because I wasn't there. Finally, the board did go into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8, conference with rear property negotiator. In regards to the Verizon Communications proposed lease, the agency negotiators are the general manager and myself. They gave direction to us but took no reportable action. And that concludes my report.
All right. Thank you. With that, next item on the agenda is a public hearing. It's the proposed fiscal budget for year 2014-2015. And with that, could I have a presentation?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. President and members of the board, the item for you consideration tonight is the first draft of the proposed budget for the upcoming fiscal year, which is fiscal year 2014-2015. There is included within this, which is also on the website, a budget message, which is addressed to the you and the board, that if your water and are accounting for that separately. How we have established that, we established it as a 550 because it's a grant account and it needs to be accounted for separately. So when you look at the information in here today, you will see that there is a 500 for water and then there's a 550 for your nitrate project. From now on, any time that you have a grant, it will start with the number that's relevant to the particular fund. So in 301 fire, if we were to have a new grant, it would become 350. That way you would know that at that point that that's related to the fire, to your fire department. We think that's very important for clarity, and it's also important that grants be accounted for separately and independent, and that we can report all costs associated with those grants. So that is a change in this budget. Also a change in the budget is that you do have a budget message. And that is consistent with the way that standard accounting practices and the way the budgets are put together. Also within this budget, and if you go to page 7, we'll just use this as an example so that you know what you're looking at. You will see that there's a department summary, and in that department summary, staff talks about some of the issues relevant to that particular fund. Also below that is what we call a budget summary. And because your previous year, 2012-2013 expenditures, are incomplete and not accurate within your financial accounting system, staff prepared this so that you have the actuals based on your audit, so that you can actually look at each one of these categories and see how they're changing or if there are changes. In this particular area, budget summary, you'll notice that under other sources and uses, there's a $25,000 charge that shows up every year. That's the repayment of the premature borrowing of the debt reserve fund in order to make the bond payment back in 2006. That is discussed thoroughly throughout this budget document. In addition to that, you'll see that there are some notes there, and staff use these notes in order to define different areas and different actions that may need or may not need to be taken. We also went in there and we wanted to move out, you'll notice, we wanted to take out the PEG expenses for the PEG grant. Unfortunately, we're not able to do that because the revenue for the PEG grant was in last year and the expenses are in this year. So you're going to see that in this particular administrative budget. As we get closer to the end of the year, we'll be able to tell you how much your PEG expenses were. They basically, staff spent almost $30,000. So it's going to be a wash. What should have happened is the grant dollars should have been recorded in the same year as the expenditures. And had this been set up as we have set up the nitrate with the 550 number, had it been set up as a 150 number, then that would not be an issue and you would see the expenses relative to the revenue. So that explains some of the issues with regards to that. You'll also see a chart. This is part of when you prepare a budget. It's important that you let you as a board know, and then in that you let the community know how you're spending your dollars. That chart talks about the department expenditures by category, and it's actually the way it's proposed. Again, this is a draft. And this is basically how we went through and set up each one of these funds so that it allows you as a board to take a very close look at each one of your funds and know where you stand at any given point. In addition to this, you'll see that in tonight's Fund 301, if you go to page 24, and 24 talks about department revenue by category for the fire department. There's a typo there, and you have an insert tonight that shows what that amount should be. In preparing draft budgets, we try our very best to make sure that everything's as accurate as possible. But in review, there are times where you find where you've got typos, even though you know that the bottom line is correct. It's just the line at the top. In this particular case, it showed us particular years. Also included, there is a glossary of terms, which then allows for people who are not financially oriented to go ahead and check out under the glossary what that truly means. We felt that this was important. It's important not just for you as a board, but it's important for anyone who picks up this particular budget down the road and wants to know what certain terms mean. Also included in here is a page, what we call, that has a statement of activities. That statement of activities begins on page, I've got to go back to the beginning, begins on page 71. And in that statement of activities, it gives you an opportunity to look at your funds, okay, at one glance. And you can go through and it shows all of the funds that are currently there, and it also will include your grant funds. So when you have grants, you'll be able to look at that in comparison to everything else that's there before you. With that, I want to express my thanks to the staff at the Community Services Department. They worked very hard on this and very tirelessly to try to get this as perfect as they possibly could, and are still continue to work on it and will until it's time for the budget adoption. With that, Mr. President, I will accept any questions, but that concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
Just real quick, just generally, what's our process here in terms of questions? And I mean, I have lots of
detailed Well, this is questions. Questions of clarification, and so it's not a discussion on the budget. Uh-huh. But if it's a question on the budget, go for it.
I'll go ahead and wait till We're just discussing it more.
Okay. Any other? Yes.
What's your time frame as far as, you know, correcting the other errors that are still outstanding?
As I stated to you before, my time frame is July 1st, and we will get as many done as we possibly can by that time. We're not sure, and that will require how to fix the 1213, because that's already been closed. So we're going to have discussions with the auditors to see if there is a way for us to go in, because once the books are closed, you don't go back in. It's illegal to do that. So we're going to have to find out what kind of an effect that's going to have on coming forward when we close this year's books. So that's the biggest problem we've got right now.
Thanks.
Dr. Wolski?
Just clarification. We have to adopt a budget by the beginning of the fiscal year, which is July 1, correct?
Correct.
All right. Any other comments? All right. Questions, yeah, of course. again, to just help me monitor time, could I just have a show of hands how many people want to speak on the budget? All right, so I only see a couple hands. What I want to do is, and if that is indeed the case, if it's only three or four people that I saw, make a comment with the 3 minutes, and then I'll consider maybe a second round. But again, I just want to monitor this in the time on the budget. Okay. So with that, again, I need keep track of time and all that. And so our bylaws, again, this is how we like to do it here in Los Osos. Stand or sit in the first two seats there, so there's somebody's papers there, they might have to move. Or stand near the recording equipment so that I can sort of assess who's left. All right. Again, it bites in the time when people don't make themselves known. And then, again, also with our bylaws here in Los Osos, you know, the federal government has theirs and the state has theirs, and it trickles on down to the county. We like you to state your name and where you're from, and 3 minutes. So with that, can I have the first speaker?
Excuse me, Mr.
Yes.
President. This is marked as a public hearing, so you would open the public hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I'd like to open the public hearing now with the first speaker. Thank you.
I think post-bankruptcy, we have to have a whole different attitude about how the district's going to run. And one thing that's been bothering me, it's been going on for some months now, is the district office hours are from 9 to 3. And I understood that when you were running a skeleton crew. But now you have almost completely filled your organizational chart. And it seems to me that the district should be a community services district and serve the public and be open from 8 to 5 when everyone arrives in the morning and everyone leaves in the afternoon. And I'm puzzled how we can find time to send staff to Farmers Market and to Earth Day, but we can't extend the office hours to accommodate the public. Something else. I'm on the Emergency Services Committee, and over the last few months, we have not seen monthly financials, which we have grown accustomed to. And when, as this budget was coming forward and having not seen those monthly financials, we did have a clean audit. I know the finance committees are going long, and there's a lot of information to digest. So on April 16th, I did a public records request, and my request was to come into the office and look at the last 2 years of bank statements for the district. Seems simple enough. I just wanted to look at them. If I'd wanted copies of any of them, I would have asked had I seen something of interest. I didn't ask for that. I asked to come in and take a look. I got a letter back basically saying the district is going to need time to find them. I can tell you where my bank statements are at home, and I bet every one of you could walk to a file or a stack of mail on your kitchen table and know where they are. But to tell a member of the public that the district's going to need 10 to 14 days to find them and then allow me to come in and look at them, I found very uncomfortable. I want transparency in this government, and I'd like to see the bank statements for the district.
Thank you. Yes, Director Olholski. Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. Next speaker.
Richard Margetson. Just a blanket statement to start. This is probably the first time in the history of this district that the presentation of a budget took less than 5 minutes. And one, maybe two questions from the board. You were told that the correction of the $22 million was corrected on this handout. Did anybody look at the handout? Add the numbers up in the column where the mistake was the mid-year budget column. Those numbers don't total the bottom number. I'm a little surprised also that in a budget hearing, neither of the board members that are committee members for finance discussed anything or made any comment before it went to the public about what happened at the Finance Committee or asked any of those questions. We were there, gentlemen, till 9:05. And the committee recommendation, I don't know if you're going to hear it, was this budget doesn't go forward in its current state. The only fund that is balanced is the fire department. You have every other budget before you is not balanced. You have theory issues here of where you're going to get an administrative allocation out of that there's not even any money in those funds to pull it from. And for this budget, with the discussions of the $714,000 that was drawn from the bond reserve, this is one meeting I wish John Seitz was still with us, because I guarantee you he could clear that up in 3 minutes. None of you were here when that happened. That's settled. That's old news. Where you get the $25,000 now is a discussion, but that's done. It's been reconciled. The agreements have been reached.
Start again. If you'd like another 3 minutes, I'd be... Yes, the same people can speak again if they'd like. Yes.
Richard Margetson again. If you turn to page... it would be 80 in your... staff report under the transfers in and out. I'm pretty sure the transfer in from wastewater and the transfer in from solid waste are supposed to probably be reversed. If you look in the budget, I will spend the rest of my time hoping that you'll have a discussion tonight about how...
Excuse me. You can stop his time. I hear a murmur through the crowd. Can we please keep it down? Thank you. All right.
Of how you're going to pull out of the wastewater fund next year, this next fiscal year for administration. Where's that money coming from? The wastewater fund's done. Bankruptcies, checks have been sent out. It's a pass-through account. It's only used for the bond payments to come in, bond payments to go out, and the little bit of fee that goes to whoever's preparing the tax rolls. I think it's probably still Wallace Group, maybe not. That's all you're allowed. I don't know where you think you're going to get that, because if you think you're going to be able to pull it out of the bond reserve, which is deficient at this point, good luck trying to get the bank to agree with that. And what reason that's important, and I'm just bringing up one of the accounts that the administrative allocation is incorrect. If you can't pull it from there, which two funds get hurt? Water and fire. Water and fire. It's the only place you've got to pull out of. You're upside down in Vista de Oro this year, $10,000 with no reserve account. And she still has you pulling $4,823 into administration. Those were the questions you guys should have had before you ever came to the public. That's how the budget meetings used to be. And then the public would weigh in on additional things that maybe you missed. The Finance Committee did not move this budget forward to be finalized. If you finalize it, you're going to have some serious financial issues next year, because you already have serious financial issues in this mid-year. There's a lot of questions to be answered. This should have been done a different way tonight, and it needs to go at least one more time to the Finance Committee before it's ever finally adopted.
Thank you. Hang on. Seeing no other speakers, I'm going to close public comment. And close public hearing, thank you. And bring it back to the board.
Now?
Yes, now okay. Board discussion.
No, I'd like to, I think Michael and I both have something to weigh in here as far as the Financial Advisory Committee meeting, because we did spend 3.5 hours, I think, almost 4 hours with the Financial Advisory Committee discussing this. But just as an overview, and I'll let Michael fill in the gaps here, but I think there's basically one overview, and I want to make it clear to the public, this isn't before us for approval tonight anyway. I mean, it's just here for a presentation and to get comments and input on it. So, but I think just I'll give the overviews to the financial advisory, and Mike can go into the details. I think the biggest concerns was twofold, I think. First of all, that we wanted to make sure we had a balanced budget, okay? And a balanced budget not only in this upcoming year, but in the future years, so we could lay the groundwork to have a continuing balanced budget situation. So, again, I'm speaking big picture right now, and I think that was the primary concern, because, as you know, the mid-year adjustment we adopted, you know, does not balance out. Let me just put it that way. So the concern was expressed that we would balance it out. The second concern gets more into details, but just it's a conceptual issue, was the withdrawals, the transfers for the administrative allocations. And I'll just give you two examples there, and I think Richard already alluded to them. But one was the transfer from solid waste of $43,000, when in fact we have no income into that fund. So how does that $43,000 come out? And it's the same issue on the solid waste, where there's a transfer of $70,272. So how do you transfer out of funds when you have no revenues coming?
Well, it's back in 2006, there was inter-department loans of $410,000 from water into the wastewater fund and $220,000 from solid waste. So we have $630,000 out there that we thought we had taken care of all the outstanding money a while back, but now here we are again. And my understanding, too, is that we're not quite positive that there's not any other little landmines under the rocks in the books. And I think for the public, too, I think part of the issue we have with the books is that the software is not being utilized properly. There was a lot of modulars that would move, should have moved the money into specific accounts, and it was not. And so what staff has been doing is literally going by hand and reconciling the money on the general ledger into the different accounts. And so that's kind of where we are at this point. And I think our intent is definitely it's got to go back to FAC and also I know back to UAC and Emergency Services Committee wants to look at it again too. And I think we have to wrap our heads around how we're going to handle the timeline that we have July 1. Do we have a temporary budget approval after we look at it again or what? And so that's my comment.
Any other?
Yes.
I'd just like to point out we have a very nice, very thick packet here. And on every page, there's a watermark. And in English, the word says draft. And I think that most of us understand the common meaning of the term draft means it's not the final product. And that's on every page.
Dr. Muthart?
Yes. First off, I want to say that I appreciate the opening comments on here. It's very consistent with how things have been explained to me throughout the process, and I think it's very very well put in terms of the circumstances that we were up against. I did spend several hours, I'll say, trying to read this, and I had some issues. The glossary, of course, helped, but some of the typos, and I particularly went to five. For example, on five, the summary on Fund 500, the numbers don't add up on the summary, and that kind of hung me up right away because that happened to be the first thing I looked at. So, but where I had trouble just on an overall view was trying to understand the deficits and how really what that meant. And I think you explained a couple of things. The actuals for 2012-2013 came from the budget, so there just seems to be some real inconsistencies from 2012-2013 to budgets to 2014-2015. I can give an example here.
Director, the actuals that are in there are not accurate. That's why we said that the 12-13 is inaccurate, and we're trying to find a way how you, when you've already got a closed set of books, how you go in and make those adjustments. That's something that the auditors are going to have to work with us on so that it's not illegal in the way that we're doing it.
Okay.
Just real quickly, to help me understand, when it says not accurate and closed book, what does it not accurately reflect?
It doesn't accurately match the audited numbers. Okay. And the audited numbers
so
are the
closed
ones
books
don't match.
Don't match the audited numbers.
That's correct.
Okay. So the accounting of the CSD. I need a little quiet in the back. Too many murmurs where I can hear them.
Sure.
That's good. No comments, please. Thank you. And so the accounting from the CSD doesn't match the audits.
That's correct.
Okay.
So a discrepancy like on page 42, for example, the 500 fund, where it shows our actual for property taxes were $285,000, but our budget is $180,000. I mean, that's a huge discrepancy.
On page 42, where it shows, if you look at the summary, it shows your total revenues for 2012-2013. They are overstated.
Okay. So basically, we can't use actuals. We can't look at those.
Not for 2012 and 2013. And that's part of the reason that we went ahead and prepared the charts mm-hmm. here so that you could look at your actuals in comparison to your budget from a more general purpose. To break it down, all right, into more into more specific areas, they don't conform. The budget titles don't conform with the titles that you have in your expenditure codes. So in order to make it where you could take a look at this, we did summary titles so that then you could make the comparison.
Okay. So how are we going to balance? I mean, how do we balance this budget?
What you're going to have to do is you'll need to direct staff to go back and balance the water and everything and all the other budgets based on what your revenues are. The problem that becomes is with Bay Ridge and Vista de Oro. All right, they need to pay their full share. You will have some reserves in your solid waste, but you have to make some sort of decision as to what kind of cost allocation plan staff is going to employ. The one that we're working with right now was from your direction, and that's based on actual time spent. And we are still spending time, all right, on the old wastewater project fund and the solid waste fund in trying to bring everything to balance as well as to identify if the costs that are in there are actually should have been there.
He might be done for a minute, too. So, Director Ohilski.
Think about this. This is
no, and that read. I mean, pardon me. That leads right into the comment that I think Michael and I have from the Financial Advisory Committee. Let's just take the transfer from the solid waste, okay? And the direction from the board was that administrative expenses will, or pardon me, allocations will be based on the actual time expended on that. We have a transfer of $43,000. For next year, I don't know how many hours that equates to, but at $43 an hour, it's 1,000 hours. Mm-hmm. And we have no revenue, so we would have to be taking the money from our reserve accounts. And there is, that's just the question. I mean, that's following up on where you're coming from on your question. So how do we balance it, I think, is a difficult question at this point. One of the things that I know we've talked about before, and Michael and I have talked about this at the Finance Advisory Committee and outside of that, you know, we all thought that we had balanced all these interfund transfers when we took that action last time, okay?
Right.
And that was our understanding at that time. We balanced all of them. Obviously, we didn't at this point. So the question is, you know, do we just write those off? I know it's more complicated with the wastewater fund than it is with the solid waste, but we could just write that off and be done with that immediately, not tonight. But so the question is, how do we deal with those intertransfer loans? The other ones we just wrote off. So, mm-hmm. But, I mean, that just follows up on your question, and that's a question that the Financial Advisory Committee had. And, again, I'm just picking on 650, the solid waste, because we don't have that transfer anymore or franchise anymore, but there's no income. There's an administrative allocation that would require us to take money from our reserves. So that's how we're balancing the budget right now. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just answering your question.
Right. Okay.
Well, I think, you know, to add to that, one of the other complications, too, is that the solid waste write-off, the $220,000, that's one thing. But the water fund, $410,000, that's ratepayer money.
Right.
And I don't see how you can write that off, because that's money that they've paid into operating the water company, and it was loaned out back in 2006, and there was no repayment schedule, which is required, implemented.
And could I just follow up on that? When the Financial Advisory Committee spoke about this, I mean, their recommendation, which wasn't unanimous by any way, shape, or form, was to pass a continuing resolution until we had an opportunity to resolve all these issues. So just to continue the current budget up until the point that all these issues were resolved. So that was the recommendation of the Financial Advisory Committee. Now, obviously, there's no action before us today, but if it takes until July 1 to resolve most of these issues, then we're not going to have a budget adopted by July 1. So if that was their recommendation, just to continue the current budget until we have a budget that we're all satisfied with, balances and addresses these concerns.
Issue with Vista de Oro, issue with administration.
So that means that Bay Ridge, fire, water, nitrate removal, drainage are all pretty good.
No.
No.
For example, and I'll just pick on one of those, Vista de Oro, we're loaning them the money.
Right.
So that
right.
money has to come from somewhere else to be loaned to that fund to pay the administration.
Right, exactly.
So.
Right. Shh, quiet. So again, that's just Vista de Oro, okay? So take Vista de Oro off, but again, Bay Ridge, fire, water, nitrate removal, drainage. Those are got a good handle on them. Please, no comments, okay?
No.
All right, thank you.
Yes, we have a fairly, I'm going to say, not. I can't say 100%, but we probably have a 95% handle on it.
So if we
the
were...
biggest issue you've got is your cost allocation and how you're going to address that. That has the...
When you
the
say
effect.
Cost allocation, you
mean... You mean the allocation of your administrative expenses. And
okay.
That's,
well, to me, what's that budget item? I mean, how much is that item?
That item is your total administrative budget.
Right. I mean, I've seen this wrong.
$625,000.
We just come up with what I'm thinking is come up with a stopgap solution for this budget for admin allocation. And then we can adjust that as we want to in the next year budget.
You have several proposals. We put together several proposals
right.
in their different cost
right.
allocation plans for you to look at.
Right. And so again, if that's the biggest issue, so let's just go back to it. That means we adopt one of those proposals just for a stopgap for this budget. And then we have admin, Bay Ridge, fire, water, nitrate removal, drainage, pretty much handled.
I don't see it that way at all because when I look at water, I see a $37,000 deficit when a few months ago we thought we had more money in the bank than we knew what to do with. And so I don't understand where that is. I don't understand
that's what I'm
what
saying.
Happened. But if you adjust the allocations, you can't say those funds are okay.
No. What I mean that we got a handle on them is that when that item comes up and we see a $37,000 shortfall, we're confident with those numbers. Unlike right now, Vista de Oro is running a deficit and we don't know where that comes from. Solid waste, you know, has administration costs. We don't know where it comes from. We've got $400,000 of ratepayers' money. We don't know how to address that. We've got $25,000 of a monthly bond payment that we can't pay. Those are separate issues. But when it comes to water, we'll know, hey, we got a $37,000 shortfall. We are confident of all the numbers and we can push those numbers around and solve water. And water will be done. Unlike these other ones where we have to go back 6 years and look through the hand calcs by hand in order to reconcile the books. Water, we won't have to reconcile the books. We'll just say, hey, where do we get $37,000 from? And that's what we can do as a board. And so we can address water. We can address, not that fire needs to be addressed, fire. We can address, you know, nitrate removal. We can address drainage so that when we see any shortfalls, we're confident of those numbers. These other ones, Vista de Oro and solid waste, those are the ones that we're going to have to sort of, and wastewater, those are the three that we're going to have to sort of spend some time on. Does that make sense?
No.
No. Okay.
And Leonard and I haven't talked about this, but I think let's just use water for an example right now. So right now, based on the current allocations, we're running a deficit of $37,000, okay? We have, and I'm just going by what you said, Leonard, but we have other issues in water that we want to look at because we have the funding of the CIP programs, we have the allocations into the water conservation program that, you know, we've put, what, $90,000 into that, and we spent like 10.
Something
so,
like,
I mean, yeah. those issues are out there. But I think that to say that we can handle that 37, I think that 37 has to be handled internal to that fund.
Exactly. Okay. That's what I mean. We put water out there and we say, hey, CIP, we're 37 short. This year, guess what? You know, capital improvements, things are might not get fully funded. We can look at water, right? We're going through a rate study, you know, so for future years. Or, you know, again, our books don't match our audit. We are in bad shape. But so we look at water for next year, and yes, guess what? CIP is not going to get fully funded. We got a $37,000 shortfall. But
those we have options, and if we change them, it changes everything.
That's why we accept one and just move on and realize it's a stopgap for us to go forward with a short period of time.
And maybe we should start talking about which one of these allocations we want to look at then.
But
what did this hurt?
I think to follow up on what you're saying, John Eric, and follow up on where you're going, I mean, we have to treat each one of these funds as an enterprise fund. And I think where you're coming from, Craig, and maybe I didn't understand that till just now, that we balance each enterprise fund. But then where John Eric's coming from, okay, we balance each enterprise fund, but we still have to balance the whole budget. So there's two, I don't want to say competing, but there's two complementary considerations here. The enterprise fund has to be balanced, but also the whole district budget has to be balanced. So if that's where you're coming from, Craig, then I understand.
That's exactly it. And I think we can do each enterprise fund working a few additional meetings. But I think we, you know, staff can put together a budget for next year for each enterprise fund, and we can address each enterprise fund. And then once we have the majority of them done, we'll come back and go, all right, now what do we do with the ones to balance the whole budget? And that's just the direction. And thank you, Marshall. You
took me a while.
So that's kind of where I am coming from, and I think Marshall agrees, and sort of how I'd like to direct staff and how we can get through, how we can get to a working budget by July 1st.
Well, I got a question for staff. Is that reasonable? I mean, honestly, last time we talked, you were up to March, I think it was, as far as reconciling the numbers. And, I mean, I don't see how you can crank that out in 60 days. I mean, that 60 days, is, I mean, they're right. I mean, you have to have the budget ready to go July 1, and there's just no way at this point.
My understanding is that they're not going to be, the old books and the audited books won't be reconciled.
But the numbers reflect onto our budget.
Well, what I'm
thinking, we have to have a best working knowledge of what our numbers truly are, unless we're going to come back and adjust the budget, or have a temporary budget.
That was the rationale for the continuing resolution. I mean, what we're doing here, we don't know how long it's going to take them to do this work,
right.
Okay? But I agree with what Mike's saying. I have no problem with the concept of balancing each enterprise fund, but we have to have the proper data to do that. So that was the concern of the FAC, was to make sure. I mean, they discussed it at length. You know, the question is, do you do what we did 2 years ago, which was we adopted a budget up through September, and then we went ahead and changed or adjusted the budget, or do you just do a continuing resolution until you have a budget? I mean, that's a call that the board's going to have to make, but we've used that temporary, well, I don't want to say temporary budget, but we adopted a budget good through September, and we used that approach. But then the approach recommended or suggested by FAC was to go ahead and with a continuing resolution if, in fact, we can't get to where we need to get to by July 1. Is that correct, Michael?
Right. But the other thing
is no comments.
The other aspect of this, though, that, like right now, going back to the cost allocation plan, okay, we have the one right now, which is the full-time equivalent, using the actual time. And I think we have to decide which way we're going to go and stay with that. You can't change it until the next budget cycle.
Correct.
It's insanity. And so right now, I mean, are we going to stay with the full-time equivalent model for this year and then come back for next year and revisit it? I know we have a subcommittee on FAC that's supposed to be looking at this. And so you tell us. I mean, I think we need to, you know, say, yes, this is what we're going to use for this fiscal year and be done with that cost allocation.
Well, we don't have to adopt a budget tonight, but I really...
No, I'm not saying we do, but I'm saying that as far as the other aspect of it is this cost allocation plan. We have to, this is what we're going to go with.
Right. And so we, that's what we do as a board. We will make, hopefully make that decision tonight.
Well, you know? But, I mean, what we're doing, if I understand correctly, what we're doing tonight is giving direction to staff.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
You know, are we just going to say, hey, do your best shot, and then when you finally resolve all the books, you know, wherever that is, then we'll actually sit down and look at this hard, or are we actually going to, say, reconcile each enterprise fund and realize that we're going to have three enterprise funds that, I don't know.
Well, that's exactly, I don't know. I don't know what we're, what numbers are going to change on this budget? Are we, if, I mean, if, what is staff working on? I mean, what are we going to direct staff to work on? I don't understand. It's not clear to me what they're going to actually work on.
Well, my understanding to continue.
Oh, June, sorry. Or a special meeting. Is that probable? Possible? In the realm of getting hit by a meteor walking out in the parking lot.
And how is it possible? Of course, theoretically, anything is possible. Is it probable? The answer would probably be no. And that's because the amount of time it's going to take us to just do this, and then the amount of time it's going to take us to prepare for each one of the meetings. I'm not saying the meetings aren't a good idea. They are a good idea, but it needs enough time. We can't be working with a committee every week and then having to turn around and try to get everything
right
together and make it the next.
Then
it just, yeah, it because then it doesn't leave us any time to do the actual work that we need to do.
So
I'm just trying to be realistic.
Right, but I'm just trying to
please do
get direction.
Yeah, I know I am. I'm trying to be very realistic with that.
And maybe, hopefully, this will be the last time I say it, but that was the reason that the FAC had suggested the continuing resolution. If, in fact, this couldn't get done, it would give them adequate time to do that. So, again, I mean, that's just the issue.
It seems it has to be done, and it has to be done correctly. Exactly. If it takes whatever, you know, if it takes that long, it takes that long.
So then does that mean the board has a recommendation for staff, or what are we doing?
Yeah.
Are we just presenting this and moving on, and then when we actually have to decide, we'll continue it, or are we?
I think that it would be a good idea from the board to say, staff, you need to go back and find a way to balance these accounts, all right, to balance these funds, not
right.
accounts, but
the enterprise funds.
The enterprise funds. The only question I would have for you, using which cost allocation method, because when you tell me to balance the entire budget, that includes the administration. Now, knowing that, as we move forward, we based our figures and our proposals on what we saw the costs were going to be. That doesn't mean we won't take another look at it and see if some of those dollars can be reduced in each one of those accounts based on where we see the actuals are coming out at this time. That has an effect also as far as reducing your overall cost and trying to cover that $37,000 that you're short in the water fund. Another point I need to make is that, and I did make this in your budget because I think it's very important, your current reserve policy is not consistent with the reserve policy you took when you did your rate increases. It far exceeds what you budgeted for during your rate increases. So that has had an effect on your bottom line for the last 3 years. And I think it's important that I make that statement to you. Because it was one of the areas we discovered in when we were trying to balance the various budgets, we found significant differences.
In essence, we were trying to overfund reserves.
You were overfunding reserves.
We were.
Yes, and that's one of. It's very important when you do a rate study and you're going to do rate increases, that you stay consistent with what you adopt at the time you're going to do that rate increase. Unfortunately, you did not go back and modify your rate increase to be consistent with your reserve policy.
Well, that's... I
don't think that's something we have to address now. I mean, that's going to come out just when we...
It's just information for you.
So can I have direction or summary from the board?
What I was going to ask counsel. Need a motion, or how are we going to do this, Michael?
Well, I have questions about determining the allocation.
How we're going to do it first?
Okay.
Well, this isn't on for an action item. It's basically informal direction to staff. What I'd suggest is that somebody summarize what they believe it is. If that's it, then anybody disagrees with it, you let us know.
So it's just a consensus.
Consensus.
Okay. So before talking about which allocation, I would entertain somebody make an attempt to summarize. Yes.
I think that, as I understand, what we're talking about here is coming back with balanced enterprise budgets, balanced enterprise accounts, the budget in each one of those accounts, and then having a balanced overall district budget. So I think we're all in agreement on that. The unknown is the allocation method, which we haven't talked about. So that's where I would propose that we give the direction.
I see the general manager nodding her head, so
I'll agree with that.
Sounds like a pretty good. Okay. So does anybody...
I'll leave the allocation to Leonard.
Right. So before we talk about the allocation... Do I see anybody against the consensus?
No, I'm not.
Okay, then...
It's possible. But understand that that's going to take a little bit longer because everything has to be input, corrected, and then rerun. You just don't...
Reverse engineered.
Yes, reverse engineered is a good way of putting it.
But that would cause us to have three separate budgets for each fund based on the three different allocations. I just think staff time would be better spent doing something else.
Just throwing it out there. Nothing's stuck.
I'm throwing it back at you.
Is there a kind of a... brief explanation of what these alternatives would do to the relative different funds in terms of what the impacts on each of them would be? Do you have any idea?
I can tell you that in most cases, the one at the top, let's start with the one at the top, which is FTEs. This is on the back of the memo. FTEs is based on full-time equivalent employees. And unfortunately, based on the 2,080 hours, fire has the most employees, so fire ends up with the majority of the cost. So what that does is that allows Bay Ridge, Vista de Oro, and drainage off the hook. And that's really not a good solution. Okay, it's given to you because that's what's used. That's one of the cost allocation plan methods that's used by other municipalities. So that's why it's presented here. The second one is as you can see, five of them, and is based on expenditures. So it's based on, it's an allocation method based on the amount of money that's actually in those funds. And the final one are the amount of expenses that are in those funds. And the final one is based on revenues. Truly, who has the most revenue and then who receives the most cost?
I'll just put one out there, is that I think revenues we have the best handle on. So I would, in this emergency sort of stopgap situation, kind of go with revenues.
Yeah, I wasn't around. I don't understand these in great depth, but it seems to me that there's quite a bit of staff time involved in measuring staff time.
Oh, yeah.
And
so
you kind of get into a loop. And on the other hand, once the software and everything is entered, it should take nearly zero staff time to calculate either expenditures or revenues. So that's one another virtue of those two choices.
Which one closely represents the way we're doing in terms of percentages? Which one's the closest to what we're doing now?
I'm not sure. Let me see.
Well, the top one doesn't take into account any of the funds. And right now we're doing actuals across all the funds.
I think probably, and I think probably the one that comes closest might be your revenues. I'd have to really go through and look at this and tell you, but I think that's probably the closest. Not necessarily is that the most accurate, though. I mean, I'm just...
No, I realize the accuracy issue, but again, it's just a stopgap.
Right.
Just this year, we have the FAC who's been assigned it, and you know they realize it's going to be a longer-term solution to that. But for right now, what's in front of us?
Well, I'm just looking for any logical type of reason to go with one or the other.
Yeah. Well, again, revenue.
I mean, other than that.
Right. Expenditures, we don't have a handle on. Revenues, we do. Usually, the more revenues you have, the more administration you have. It's a loose correlation.
I mean, I don't care for the full-time employee one myself.
I think,
I think everybody's in agreement there.
At
yeah.
all. The other two, if I when looking at these, I mean, I came to the same kind of conclusion that revenues was the closest one that.
Yeah,
to what we're doing, so it might be the most fair. I don't know.
I guess if I could backtrack on something I said previously, I mean, if we all agree that FT...
Hang on. We're doing really good there. I realize it's hot, but it's starting to get a little bit too loud in the back. So, but thank you for what you've been doing so far.
So the FTE, I think everybody is pretty much at consensus that that one should just be dropped. So then the question is, how much work would it really be to come up with the two expenditures and revenues? And maybe that's the best approach to take at this point.
Mm-hmm. Like
so
that.
I'll just throw that out for staff as a question.
You're talking about modeling both of them?
Yeah, and it is possible since you've narrowed it.
That as a board on a separate issue.
That's fine. I just want to remind you. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to forget that.
Well, like you know, suggest that staff you know model both expenditures
okay.
and revenue for us to evaluate the budget.
All right. So then, do I have a consensus with that? By the head mm-hmm. nods, I will go with a yes. No, I'll take the smiling faces and the head counts. With that, I believe that concludes the public hearing item number 7 on the agenda. And now we get to number 8, public comments for items not on the agenda. And again, I'm going to do this again just to help me monitor. How many people are here to speak for items not on the agenda? All right, so I think that was right around 10. So, so let's see. I'm thinking 2 minutes. Is that a problem? Okay. So I am going to change this to 2 minutes each. First speaking. Okay. And so is there a way to pause the little alarm that goes off on the end? Do you have control of that? Yeah. Yeah, so we're just, right, I don't want to stop somebody in mid-sentence is all. Okay. Yeah, and then they'll have my pleasant voice. Yeah. Okay, so we are going to go with 2 minutes, and with that, I'm going to start item number 8, public comment for items not on the agenda. And again, our bylaws here in Los Osos is that you state your name and where you're from, and I want to thank people for already standing up, getting ready to speak.
President Baltimore, I'm yes. sorry, can I say something?
Sure.
I just in fairness, I think probably a lot of people planned their talk for 3 minutes, and I think asking them at the last minute to shorten it, I don't know. I just seems
okay. I don't have a problem with that, but I hope then I have the board that if we're pushing 10 o'clock, the board will be a little open.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Okay, so with that, with 3 minutes, and I have a board that's a little open. All right. So now then you're going to get the joy of the buzzer in your talk. All right. Thank you very much, Director Moodhart. I appreciate that. And with that, first speaker.
I like it. My clock's already working. I haven't said a word. Yeah, Tom Salmon, and where I'm from is irrelevant to you, sir. Tonight I'm going to give you a definition for a code of ethics. A code of ethics is a set of principles and rules used by companies, governments, and individuals to govern their decision-making and choosing between right and wrong. What I just witnessed here in the last 30 minutes amazes me that we don't even have an accountant who can be honest about our budget. But then with the board that I see that she presents this to, it all makes sense to me. In the last year, this board has wasted 150 million gallons of treatable water. You knew about this issue and refused to do anything. I have the information me here with the quantities through the county. I had the water tested through BSSK Analytical out of Bakersfield, and it was only a few drops high of nitrates. Everything else was able to be returned to the community. That is 460 acre-feet that this board allowed to go to the bay. And your excuse was, we wrote a letter. Well, you know what? They wrote a letter to Hitler, too, and he came back in 38 with that letter. It didn't stop the war. So we are now... Right. Why? It's part of my 3 minutes. Say, absolutely, I can go there. Well, then you can leave the room, sir. You don't have to sit there.
I'm not going to have racist comment.
What racist comment? Where is the racist? It's historical, sir. I think you're being ignorant here, but then I wouldn't expect anything else from you. Now, I'd like my time back that he just made that presentation go away. There was no racist. It was a definition of history. Okay? Now, I'm sorry, but your wasting of that 6 months' worth of water in this drought-stricken time doesn't make any sense at all. And it goes back to that definition of ethics.
Wasting water is like the Holocaust?
Whoever said the Holocaust?
Director Storm.
I said the Munich Pact.
Director Storm.
Sir, I don't think... Then go away. I don't really care if you're listening to this either. It really is irrelevant to me. I'm talking to the community. They need to know that you lost 150 million gallons of water. And whether you all leave or not is irrelevant to me, because it falls upon deaf ears. You did nothing other than write a simple letter to the county to try to stop that water from being lost.
I apologize for everybody having to wait. I just feel it's important that everybody's here. This will be the moment at which my voice starts to shake because I wasn't prepared to having to wait, so you're going to have to suffer through that. Okay, I'm not going to wait any longer, but
no,
I'm disappointed that I don't have the whole board here. My name is Nancy Motter, and I'm a resident here of Los Osos. I'm here tonight to ask this CSD to call upon the County Board of Supervisors to take a proactive approach in adopting a San Luis Obispo county-wide ban on fracking. I have two main concerns. And I want to back up. There's going to be some other members of my group that's going to be talking about fracking in a little bit more. But my main two concerns is the preserving of our precious water supplies. Water in our county is a very precious resource, and it should be protected at all costs. We have enough water woes between Los Osos and North County for water anywhere in our county to be contaminated with toxins for the purpose of fracking. A strong community has at its very core a healthy water supply. To pollute on purpose is ludicrous, and it is inexcusable during times of drought. Fracking also has been linked to stimulation of earthquake faults. Here in Los Osos, we're in Zone 5, which is within 10 miles of Diablo Canyon. I'm asking you to protect our community. If there's a chance at all, any chance at all, of stimulating an earthquake in this region, then we need to stop that activity. And I urge you to protect this very lovely community. We are an important part of the county's $1 billion tourist industry, and I feel our voices need to be heard. Even though fracking isn't happening in Los Osos, its impact could be felt here. San Luis City and Arroyo Grande have already written letters to support a ban on fracking in San Luis Obispo County. I have gone out and gotten petitions signed. We have over 160 signed petitions supporting a ban on fracking, and I'm continuing to gather petitions, and it is the easiest thing to do because there are so many people that are against the practice of fracking. And I urge you to write a letter to the Board of Supervisors supporting a ban on fracking in our county. Thank you.
Excuse me. Nancy, just real quick. The 160 people, all of Los Osos, from Los Osos.
Pardon, say again?
Your 160 people on your petition, are they all from Los Osos?
Yes, they are.
Thank you.
Yes. And more. Just I haven't counted the other ones.
My name is Marcia Munson. I'm a longtime citizen here. I have a letter from our Assembly District candidate for the 35th District. Thank you, President Baltimore, and the entire OSOS CSD Board of Directors. Thank you for being willing to listen to the community's request for you to write a letter to the county Board of Supervisors regarding the important and growing environmental threat of fracking. We ask that the board continue its role in providing for the health and safety of its citizens by utilizing the clearest and strongest language possible, asking the county for regulation prohibiting fracking. The dangers and dire environmental impacts of hydraulic fracturing are understood. Growing water contamination, toxic spills, increases in earthquake activity, and millions of gallons of water needed per well, to just to name a few of the problems. The fossil fuel industry claims their product is relatively safe, a claim refuted by most respected and peer-reviewed scientists. But even if this were to be believed, the burning of this dirty fossil fuel would, as NASA climate scientist James Hansen said, be game over for the planet, unquote. Please urge the county to say no to fracking and yes to the sustainable future of Slo County and its citizens. Thank you, Heidi Harmon.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Lauren Kuswara, and I live here in Los Osos. About a week ago, I mentioned to my husband I wanted to speak tonight, and he says, okay, well, you better have facts, facts, facts. And I thought, okay. So the Despo County, their home in the future. I'm asking you to please stand behind and voice your approval of a ban of hydraulic fracturing in San Luis Obispo County. And thank you for letting me speak from my heart.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, President and directors. My name is Stacy Hunt. I live at 456 Skyline Drive in Los Osos. And I'm here to ask this Los Osos Community Services District to add its voice to other communities in the county to urge the Board of Supervisors to put in a ban of hydraulic fracturing in the county of San Luis Obispo. As you've heard, and I won't repeat what the others have said about the dangers, and you can imagine the uproar in Los Osos if drilling rigs started going up around here. And while that's probably not a big chance of that, other areas in the county are not so lucky and are targeted for this. And the citizens in those areas of the county are terrified that their water is going to be gone and their groundwater is going to be contaminated. So I think Los Osos needs to rise up in solidarity with all the other citizens in the county who are very concerned about this, and please send in a letter to the supervisors to ban fracking in the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Kevin J. McCarthy, and I'm actually from Arroyo Grande. And I'm here this evening in support of your local citizens and their request to you for that letter to the supervisors. In South County, there are three things that are pending. One is a drilling project that's requesting a permit from the city or from the county planners at the Porter Ranch, and that's a request for 4 test wells to be drilled. That's pending. The Acceleron project of a few years past is still in an appeals process and is likely to surface at any time. But moreover, the Price Canyon, unincorporated area near Pismo Beach, which has been a drilling operation for many, many years, is currently requesting 350 new wells and 100, quote-unquote, replacement wells to be drilled. All of these projects state no fracking intended. However, if they get permission from the planning department, it's a simple matter for them to go to the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources and request fracking permission. When we approached the City Council in Arroyo Grande, they did their own research, and they agreed that although the industry says that it's a safe process, that the industry, of course, has a vested interest in that, and that realistically there are no studies that have been done that prove it to be safe. Another thing that's a big concern is that the federal government recently has allowed the offshore wells that do fracking to discharge all of their wastewater. That's thousands and thousands of gallons of brine and the chemicals that are brought back up into the open ocean as long as they're 3 miles off coast, as long as it's discharged 3 miles off coast. So the Arroyo Grande City Council realized that all of the communities are interdependent, and they took it upon themselves to write a letter to the county requesting at least a moratorium on the process until it's proven safe. So again, I'm in support of your local citizens and their request for a letter from you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, I'm Sherry McCarthy from Arroyo Grande also, and I would like to, if I can, concede my 3 minutes to Ms. Jeannie Blackwell.
No.
Can't do that?
No, I can't
well,
do that.
Well, then I will highly recommend that your board here to please write a letter, and I actually have sample letters that I can hand in. That the San Luis Obispo City wrote to the county board of supervisors, and also Arroyo Grande's letter. Yeah. And as examples, so easy do, just fill in the blanks.
Please hand them to
Thank
our.
You.
Yes, next speaker.
Hi, my name is Jeannie Blackwell, and I don't know where to start. I'm going to have to start in the middle now because it's 6 minutes, and I was hoping for. An extra 3. And I will just preface this by saying that there is no fiscal impact or staff time required on writing this letter because we provided you with a nice sample. And that was also right off of what San Luis Obispo wrote to the Board of Supervisors, so we know it'll pass muster. Okay, I have petitions here from 1,500 people that have signed asking the Board of Supervisors to ban fracking in San Luis Obispo, and these are from slow people, all people in the area here, that are very concerned about fracking, mainly because it's an unregulated, and frackers aren't real good. Petition agree fracking needs to be banned. We realize this may be an unusual request, but we know it is also within your power and jurisdiction to do so. So please join us and the other residents here tonight and the over 1,500 people that have signed calling on the Board of Supervisors to adopt a countywide ban prohibition on fracking. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And may I present the petition?
Yes, send them over there. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is George Manel, Los Osos resident. I'm here to urge you as well to send a strong letter to the Board of Supervisors recommending that they ban fracking in San Luis Obispo County. This is a technology that is way ahead of safety studies. There are so many questions already brought up, and I won't go into those. But what I would like to say is that we in California have a cushion in terms of energy production. The numbers right now are we have the capacity to produce anywhere from 20 to 30% more than peak demand in the state of California. We do not have to be part of the guinea pig test trials of what fracking does or doesn't do in the long term. We have plenty of time to watch this unfold and decide if this is right for the county. So there's really no reason for us to rush in on this, regardless of one's position, because the answers on the technology aren't in yet. So again, I urge you that we can take this in a cautious fashion and ask that the County Board of Supervisors ban fracking in San Luis Obispo County until such time as the numbers are in that makes sense one way or the other. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, Board. My name is Chuck Cicina, resident of Los Osos, and I do urge you to add your voice to the ban on fracking. That's not why I'm here tonight. I'm here representing the Los Osos Sustainability Group. We are concerned about our groundwater basin right here in Los Osos. We're concerned that the basin plan for the Los Osos groundwater basin, as proposed in your public review draft, will allow saltwater intrusion to destroy the Los Osos Basin and could interfere with the objective of the Wastewater Project Coastal Development Permit Condition Number 5 to ensure that the project implementation is accomplished in a manner designed to maximize the long-term ground and surface water and related resource health and sustainability. We submitted a whole stack of recommendations to the Board of Supervisors recently. We have not heard back from them, even though we requested a response. We ask that you review these and support what you can from the amendments to the basin plan that we would like to see. And one thing that we'd like to do is request that you think about the fifth Thursday of the month. You used to have joint meetings with LOCAC once or twice a year, whenever there was a fifth Thursday. That happens this month, May. Let's have a joint meeting with LOCAC. We would like to come talk for 20 minutes about what we think about the basin plan, and we'd like Rob, somebody from the ISJ here, to get a dialogue going. We think it could be strengthened. There are things like the fact that the county thinks that we've reached our conservation objective, and there was a target set in the coastal development permit of 50 gallons per day per person indoor use. We can go beyond that. You've already accomplished that with your rate structures. Your increases in water rates have accomplished that already before the conservation program, the rebate program, even kicked in. So let's go further. Let's go outdoors and do that. Some of the other concerns we have with the basin plan is that the wastewater is going to come out at 900 milligrams per liter with salts. That's too high for a lot of agricultural crops to be using. The farmers aren't wanting to touch that water. They've got one agreement with a dry land farmer. That's wasting our water. That's not ag exchange. We need to work out a program where we can trade potable water for that reclaimed water, even if we have to be putting wells on the treatment plant property and bring that water back into the community. We've got a whole list of suggestions. But I would like you to think about that fifth Thursday and a dialogue for the community, because this groundwater basin, we've already capped off Zone E, I'm sure you already know that, at the Palisades well. That was a third of our drinking water supply. It's not coming back. So this is an urgent issue, and I'll leave one of these with each of you to make sure you get it. Thank you.
Okay, did you hand them to Ms. Cooter? Thank you for doing as I asked. Please, if you have anything to hand to the board, please give to Ms. Cooter.
Okay.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Elaine Watson, also Los Osos Sustainability Group. And we are going to strongly, strongly urge you to agree to and set a joint meeting with LOCAC. We've known for some time that the basin is in serious jeopardy. The more data that comes forth points to a situation that's only getting worse. We do not have time on our side, and they've proven out to be true, to be correct. The Third Street well dropped 4 feet between October 2012 and July 2013. It's likely below seawater level now, and again, likely due to dewatering. As Chuck just said, there's no place for about 200 acre feet of recycled water to go, and the signed recycled water contracts do not require growers to use that water to reduce pumping, and it does not mitigate for seawater intrusion. We are in the worst drought since the Civil War. An EPA worst-case climate change scenario assumes 11.8 inches of rain on average until 2050 and 14.7 inches on average until 2100. And that scenario estimates that yield in the basin will go down by 30% or so. We've had 4 inches on average for the last 3 years and 14 on average for the last 10 years. The worst case scenario may not be enough, and we need to prepare for the basin now. And again, that's why we need this joint meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
My name is Keith Weimer, Los Osos Sustainability Group, and I want to echo those requests. We would like to have 20 minutes. We've done 5 or 6 years of research on the basin, and we'd like to present what we have and ask some questions that need to be asked. I'm going to cite Supervisor Gibson's response to me last week at LOCAC as evidence of a need for a focused meeting on the state of the basin. Supervisor Gibson has said on a number of occasions that there is enough water in the basin for build-out and building, although we're level 3 of severity for resource deficiency in the worst drought in 100 years, over 100 years. And when seawater intrusion was last measured, it had accelerated by 10 times through our main drinking water supply. It was said to be due to the drought, and the drought has gotten worse. I asked him what his conclusive evidence is. The CDP also requires conclusive evidence of ample water before building is allowed. I asked him what his conclusive evidence is that there is enough water for building. I asked him what his conclusive evidence is that the model has it right this time when it has been wrong by 30 to 80% in the past. I asked him what his conclusive evidence is that seawater intrusion has stopped, because any additional water use will only make the overdraft worse. Finally, I asked him what the improvements to the LOWWP conservation program, which ones he would support with the remaining $4 million of the $5 million the CDP requires to be spent. He first said that he has no idea where seawater intrusion is. He said that he was told there's enough water for building, presumably by someone in the ISJ working group. He said his evidence is based on the model, and he apparently believes that it constitutes conclusive evidence. Finally, he said that Los Osos Wastewater Project Conservation Program has reached its objective of 50 gallons per person per day, and the county will apply for a CDP amendment to redirect the money. I thought the basin plan proposed that the county was supposed to administer the conservation program using the $4 million. I thought seawater intrusion was an extremely serious problem in 2010 due to a drought, and the drought is worse now. I thought the objective of the basin plan was to reverse seawater intrusion and achieve a sustainable basin, not justify building. These issues and how to reverse seawater intrusion as soon as possible are important for a discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Lindy Owen, Los Osos. I would like to definitely ask all of you to consider the letter to the Board of Supervisors supporting a ban on fracking in the entire county. Just a reminder, some people think that natural gas is a clean product, but it is derived from fracking. So we're in a dilemma on how we're going to solve energy problems, but destroying our water supply to get fuel is not the answer. I also would like to thank the sustainability group for the immense amount of work that they've done. Some of you on the board are aware of the information that's coming forward. This ISJ settlement needs to be looked at. The options are looking at something affordable versus, I believe it's $45 million for the planned build-out. This community can't take another hit of $45 million. We don't even know how much the entire sewer is going to cost. And it was noted that the county has finally reached out, and they sent conservation information, a little third of a sheet in our last billing. I would ask that we also consider this sewer meeting, which is televised. Everybody in Los Osos that gets Channel 20 could know what is going on with this county sewer. Is appalling to me. It's a show that we're in the dark, and we're the ones that must live with it. So please consider making some time. This is the time to do something about our basin, and we need to be involved, and I'm not real happy with what the county is doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening again. I am Julie Tacker, and I support the anti-fracking movement and support their request of you. I support the sustainability group's request of you. My comments tonight are my concern for the district and the money, and my concern for the district and its water. Mr. Ohilski represented this district in the bankruptcy, and it's not looking like it's working out very well. Mr. Ohilski represents the district in the ISJ. That's not looking like it's working out very well. Mr. Ohilski represents the property owner for the McDonald's project. Mr. Ohilski has a conflict in what he represents. Does he represent the water basin? Because that's what I would have expected in his representation at the ISJ. Or does he represent his client, who is going to use more water than historically used at the bank? That client, the McDonald's, he actually represents the property owner, but the property owner doesn't get paid unless McDonald's pays his rent. So the McDonald's applicant misrepresented their water use at the Morro Bay McDonald's, suggesting that post-remodel for 6 months worth of time was 980 gallons a day. In fact, for the same 6 months in the previous year and the previous year before that, McDonald's used less the prior years. The remodel had no effect on those 6 months that were represented to the Board of Supervisors to fill the delta between a baseline and a consumption rate. The delta that was used for mitigation is wrong. The project is not even water neutral. It will use more. It will use about 2 homes worth of water more than the mitigation measures applied by the Board of Supervisors. If Mr. Ohilski has an ethical bone in his body, he will fix that. He will see that the applicant mitigates 1-to-1.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Richard Margetson. I know it's cliche this time of year when you hear this may be the most important election for this district, but I believe this election coming up in June may be, for this district, the most important one in probably the last 20 years. Every one of you has experienced issues with the county, and especially Mr. Gibson. Were we happy when they approved the contracts with the school districts? And we found out at the last minute and had to rush to the school board meeting to try to get them to at least consider suspending their decision. And then he turns around and is selling 60 acre feet of water to dry land farmers at $100 an acre foot. But the school district gets to pay, depending on which school will be taking the water, anywhere from $1,900 to $2,500 an acre foot. He has not responded to any of your requests to come and do presentations and use this camera, which replays 60 times before your next meeting, twice a day, to take advantage of getting information out to this community. he was going to do appears at one of these meetings. Mr. Clift, who's running against him, promised he would. From the minute he announced his bid for supervisor, he's been at every one of these meetings. On that issue alone, he should be elected in June.
Thank you. Seeing no more speakers, I will close public comment and head to agenda item number 9, administrative and committee reports. With that, I'd like to welcome Chief Veneris and the fire department report.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, both in the audience and on TV. Again, it's my honor to be here tonight to talk to you about the March 2014 Chiefs Report. Prior to starting that, though, there's two things I'd like to point out. The first is the reserve firefighters have been walking the district in the last several days, dropping off flyers. Many people received a door hanger just like this, and you have one in front of you. There's several at the back of the room now. The purpose of this door hanger and to walk the district is to let the people know that we're going to be doing a chipping event. The CSD, in cooperation with CAL FIRE, the Cooperative Fire Protection Program of the United States Forest Service, Pacific Southwest Region, the California Fire Safe Council, including the San Luis Obispo Fire Safe Council, and the Los Osos Focus Group have all teamed up together to fund 4 days of chipping. The chipping is at no cost to the to community members. The focus right now is on the state responsibility areas up on the upper ends of the district and the higher elevations, although we have been walking out in the local responsibility areas as well, the district maintained areas. So areas along Highland and Cabrillo, Bayview, out in the Napomo, the Willow area, and around the eucalyptus groves near Monarch Grove School have all received these flyers. What we're looking for is on May 19th through the 22nd to have our piles out there cut by the local owners or their hirees to be piled no larger than 10 foot in diameter, 6 foot in height. Size of the material in there to be chipped no bigger than 8 inches in diameter. We can't chip things like pampas grass and leaves and palm fronds, but brush and tree trimmings and stuff we can chip. They must be accessible to the edge of the road and near the driveway so I can get the chipper in there, back it in there, and we'll chip the material on site and leave it there. There is at the bottom of this little door hanger, there is a place for people to fill out their name, their property address, and a phone number, and what they estimate us to be able to come out and chip. We will prioritize it, try and get to those areas in those 4 days. And we've made a commitment at the fire station, if we can't get it all done in that week, then we'll work with the reserve firefighters and go out and continue chipping until we're able to help the community with this project. The second thing I'd like to point out is on April 9th, the president, the vice president, the general manager, Chief Lewin, several members of the Emergency Services Committee, as well as several members of the Fire Safe Council, Los Osos Focus Group, met with the Firemen's Fund and members of DeWitt Stern to do a press conference. Purpose of that press conference was to celebrate and announce the $10,000 grant that the district and the fire department received several months ago. So we'd like to publicly thank Jeannie Martis from the Fireman's Fund and John Hamlin and Charles Johnson from DeWitt Stern. At that press conference, we received a very nice, large check. As you remember, the real check that came a couple months ago was used to purchase boots for the firefighters up there, laryngoscopes for the paramedics, and carbon monoxide and smoke detectors, which we still have a number of them up there. So if individuals are looking for a smoke detector and a carbon monoxide inspector, they can contact the fire station at 528-1053. We'd be happy to either give them a detector or go out and help them put it in. So that concludes the extra stuff. In the month of March, the station responded to a total of 102 calls. 11 of them were simultaneous calls. six of those simultaneous calls required advanced life support, which is statistically a very high number for us. Of the 102, 72 were medical aids, 42 requiring advanced life support, 7 traffic collisions, and 7 incidents reported as fires. We had some personnel changes in the month. One firefighter resigned. One firefighter that we had in training did not pass due to a manipulative evaluation failure, although he does want to come back and try again next year and is making efforts to be more successful. Engineer paramedic Neil Moriarty, who has been in that fire station now for approximately 8 years, took a permanent position in San Mateo. The last ISO update was just before CAL FIRE showed up. General Manager Buell and Chief Pickens concluded that, and it's our expectation that we will certainly maintain the current ISO rating, and we're optimistic that we may be able to increase it. More information on that as things come out. That concludes my Chief's report. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Any questions from the board?
Chief, when do you expect the results of that, of the ISO evaluation?
It'll be a while. It's a very convoluted and detailed process. We've submitted the first round of information. They've now come back with secondary requests, and we're trying to confirm some information on our part and with one of the water purveyors in the area, not the district. My best guess is it'll be sometime in 2016.
Great. Thank you.
I just want to make a quick comment. Again, myself, Vice President Wright, and General Manager Kivley were there for that the grant from DeWitt Stern. And I did not know this, but the new boots that were purchased through it, the old boots for our reserves were repurposed, a.k.a. hand-me-downs. And they were also very, non-conforming to the body. And so firemen could actually twist ankles in them, and now the new boots help mitigate that, and it's a welcomed gift.
Absolutely, we're very happy with them. Yep. Thank you, sir.
All right, the Utilities Department report.
Good evening, President Baltimore, Vice President Wright, board, staff, and public. My name is Margaret Faulkner, and I'm here to report on the operations of the Utilities Department for March 2014. As far as water is concerned, 15.5 million gallons was produced, which is a decrease in production from last year by approximately 15%. 57% of the service area was billed for approximately 15.6 million gallons for the period February 10th through April 10th, and this generated $121,943 in revenue. And this represents a decrease in consumption by approximately 7% and 10% decrease in revenue when compared to last year at this time. From the tables on your report, you can see that the runtime hours and productions were down from last year also. And also, you've got the well summary for the month of March to get more information on soundings and disinfection and things. During March, the crew upgraded several service lines and replaced some old stuck meters. And they assisted the contractor with planned shutdowns and assisted the contractor with also a hydrant installation. The monthly monitoring report was submitted to the Department of Public Health with no violations noted. And we encourage the public to stop by the office, pick up water conservation fixtures. And staff will be at Farmers Market on May 19th providing more handouts and fixtures. I just heard about that today, so I didn't get it published. I'm sorry. As far as drainage is concerned, we actually measured a little bit of rain in March, not much, 1.38%, inches. Also, during the month of March, crews worked on the drainage pump at 16th and Paso Robles Avenue, and they continue to maintain and monitor Bay Ridge and Vista de Oro That concludes my report for tonight. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer.
Questions?
I have a question. This is curiosity. Where do we measure rain from?
It's a requirement of our permit.
No,
it's down at the yard.
Down at the yard.
Yeah, the crew does that. There's the ones that the county uses is out at the landfill. Okay. So it's different. Mm-hmm. Rains in pockets, different areas.
Right. I have a question about our bi-monthly billing. I'm sure at one time when I first started, I asked why we did that in a bi-monthly way. And so I'm going to ask kind of again why we do that. And would our new software enable us to go to a more regular billing where we can have monthly correlation between production and billing and such?
Well, yes, we can always go to monthly. It's just that it would...
In automatic meters, which are just done as meters deteriorate, right?
Yeah, right now we're just phasing it in. We aren't doing a
right.
full
so
project.
It's something to maybe consider with the new equipment.
Cost. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, Director Wright.
Thank you.
Just clarification. Someone asked me this, and I didn't have the answer top of my head. But in the report, when you talk about static water level, pump water level, drawdown level, what's the differential? What's the definition, I guess, on what those mean?
I think Rob could tell you that better than I could. But do you want to go ahead and tell? So
how deep are the wells?
I've just been giving them the static levels of the wells here. You wanted to know what the difference is on the drawdowns.
We'll do this off the cuff. Thank you. Static water level is generally that level achieved in the well when no pumping is going on. It hasn't gone on for a while. It's fully recovered. Can be tough to get in a production well to get true static, but that's the definition. Pumping water level is generally the level that's achieved, measured from the ground to the level where you're actually, when you're pumping, the water level drops, and then they measure that. And you'll notice that the drawdown level is generally the difference between the two. And it looks like it is, yeah. So static, nothing happening, pumping when the pump is on, and then the difference between the two is the drawdown level.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board? No. Thank you very
much. Mr. President, Margaret, would you like to tell them that you're participating, that we're participating with the chamber, at the chamber event?
Oh, yes, we will be there. It'll be
the date is?
When is it?
15th, I think.
Is it May 16th?
May 16th.
Yes. Yeah. It'll
be
here.
Thank you. Very
Thank
good.
Thank you.
All right, General Manager's report. General Manager's report.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board. The General Manager's report for the prior month is included within your information. And should you need additional information, please let me know. Thank you.
Any questions? No. All right. Thank you. Now we'll move on to LOCAC report.
We are, Mr. President, directors. LOCAC meeting of April 24. First, we had a sheriff's report. They reported roughly 500-plus calls, very much within the normal range. Six drunk in public. That was the one that stood out the most. Los Osos was sort of quiet for a while. It's a nice thing. The next item was Supervisor Gibson's report. The items that came up from that, including some of the questions raised by the public, were... he stated that the last pipe is going to the ground shortly, cleanups and surfacing and the plant are still to be done. There's a plan this summer to do microsurfacing at LOVR near Foothill, roughly a mile plus on each of the two streets. He spoke about parks and the need to finish the community plan first and some possibility of considering the Midtown site in that context. Expected to be working on the collection system by July. Hope to have the treatment plant 2015 and 2016 for the wastewater project, and also for that project lateral hookups 2016 and completion. He did not provide an update. Didn't have an update for us on the proposed donation of the land down here that some fellows can't develop. I think they've come to you as well to discuss it. They hope to contribute it for a park, maybe a dog park. Have they in fact contacted you? May I ask? Yes. Yes. No. They came to LOCAC and we asked them to come to you.
No.
Okay.
All right.
I just want to make sure they've made some contact.
Right.
Great. He spoke of build out at 19,200 in our community. He thinks that seems sustainable, obviously. Right. He spoke of the target of $50 gallons per person per day interior use for water, and that was discussed by members of the community and to the level of ambient background radiation, which would be useful. We discussed, obviously, we had our election coming up, and since the candidates who filed in the various districts were unopposed, they were accepted and elected by acclamation. We did discuss possibility of revising our bylaws to provide for write-in. We don't permit that at present. We've discussed it in the past. I hope we discuss it again. And we're going to, you know, there were some things we talked about publicizing LOCAC a little better. There were questions from the community that I don't know if they're interesting to you, but items not on the agenda. We were requested to provide a checklist of all the projects that we're looking at, especially for land use, that the community plan be posted at the library in hard copy, and we're going to be doing that. That we do a workshop on water sustainability, which many of us were very favorably inclined, and that's the very workshop that was mentioned here earlier tonight. So conceivably we'll do it, conceivably you'll do it, and perhaps we can do it together. And that's the gist of it. Anything?
No.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
The community plan, what's the timeline on that as far as it being implemented in Los Osos?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know that?
No, I think I don't think it's adopted till late in the year.
Okay. But they've done the survey. That's been completed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, extensive work.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Very thorough.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next report is Emergency Service Advisory Committee.
Okay, thank you. We met on the 15th of April, and it was outside of the chief's reports and stuff, is primarily discussing budget and CPI. And I think finance will talk more about that, because the Emergency Services Committee could not support the CPI report that we have in front of us, because it was pointed out that there's some math errors. And that was cleared up at the 428 finance meeting. And then we also went through the budget, the 301 budget, and the recommendation was to have it come back to ESAC in May for another review. Some discrepancies were pointed out, and so we hope to have that, a better look at that, as we discussed earlier tonight. The other thing that came up was in regards to the budget and the fire department's need for a Zoll monitor, which is a chest monitor, and a thermal imaging camera, and also a Ezio paramedic bone drill for, I'm not medical guy on that, but anyway. Yeah, so there was pointed out that there was some extra money in this year's budget and directed staff to work with the chief in getting that done or purchased this year. And so our next meeting is May 20th, and that concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? No? All right. Utilities Advisory Committee.
Yes, Mr. President. Utilities Advisory Committee met on April 9th with all the members present and eager to proceed. The first item was to be a presentation on our water conservation. That would be our outdoor water conservation efforts by staff, but staff was unable to be present due to an illness. However, we did have a follow-up discussion regarding the RFQ for the development of the public relations and advertising campaign for the outdoor water conservation. Last month, our board directed staff to prepare a request for qualifications. At the meeting, committee member Munns recommended that we include, and I think Mr. Miller was involved with this as well, that we include a recommendation of qualifications along with an RFP. The reasoning being that this would be more cost effective by producing a more informative document, more or less stating this is what we propose and this is why we are qualified to do it, rather than this is our qualifications, which okay. We originally were requesting. We received public comment stating that money could be spent otherwise. However, the committee reiterated its support for the proposal. I would like the board to revise its direction to staff to continue with a more inclusive RFP as recommended by committee member Munns. I won't expound on that anymore. The next UAC meeting will be held next Wednesday, May 14th at 5:30 at the district office.
Very good. Any questions from the board? Anybody? So we are directing staff to put out an RFP as opposed to an RFQ, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Any comments from the board on that? Speaking of the microphone, please.
Mr. President, it's an RFQ with a scope.
With a scope.
And that's what we're going to be getting them to send to us.
That's an agenda item tonight.
No.
It's on our agenda. Yes, it is.
No, this is a different. This is our for the marketing for.
Oh, for the marketing. I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah. I thought.
So would RFQ with a scope, would that meet Mr. Munn's recommendation? Okay. Thank you.
All right. I missed where we were going.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
I'm confused now. Mm-hmm.
All right. With that, financial advisory.
Okay, financial advisory. Mike and I will tag team on this again. The first meeting, we had two meetings. The first meeting was a budget meeting, and I think we probably pretty much covered most of that during our budget item. But as Mike mentioned when he was giving comment during that item, there was a series of questions raised by the Financial Advisory Committee that staff has taken down, and staff, as they previously discussed, will be responding to in their budget, you know, changes here. So, Mike, was there anything else other than on the budget that we need to add?
No, because the CPI was the next meeting.
Yeah, that's
they kind of blend together.
Yeah. We met a week, yeah, we had a lot of meetings. Yeah. They were a week apart, but they were a lot of time. The next meeting, which was just last Monday, there was primary, we went over the warrants and registers that are on your consent agenda, and there was really, you know, just a minor discussion on that. But we did have Rob Miller attend to go over two things. One was to go ahead and talk about the fire tax CPI, because there was a question raised at our last meeting about a discrepancy in the calculations, and Rob explained that to the Financial Advisory Committee, and I think that everybody was satisfied with the explanation and that that's moving forward to come to our board for adoption at a subsequent meeting. So I don't know, Rob, I don't think we have any questions to add to that. Do you, Mike?
Well, just, yeah, the discrepancy came out comparing the final numbers, because we use an average of the San Francisco and Los Angeles Consumer Price Index, and there's a slight discrepancy, math error, I believe. And I think, Rob, it came out to our benefit to have it looked at again, is that we have a $1,200 net gain on revenue out of the CPI. Mm-hmm. So that's positive on that. And so that's probably the bottom line on that one. And so then we've got the other thing on the agenda.
This is the item that's on the agenda later. Rob came to the meeting. He talked about two items. He talked about the fire tax CPI, and then he also talked about the RFQ for the rate study, which is the item that's our last item on the agenda. So, the bottom line was that there was a discussion about that matter, and on a 2-1 vote, the committee recommended that the board go ahead and approve the recommendation for the RFQ for the rate study, and to go ahead and with the $5,000 budget for the initial scoping with that consultant. So that's the recommendation from that committee. I'll go into more detail when that item comes up, though. And our next meeting scheduled for, I believe, June 2nd, is that correct? We'll probably have intermediate meeting for the budget, but that's our regular meeting scheduled for June 2nd at this point. So that's it.
All right. Thank you. Any questions from the board? No? All right. Then we have director announcements of district and community interests and reports on attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, and seminars.
I have one. As a board member, I'm now on the CAPSLO board, and so I attended the meeting on 4/17 on that. And I think for the public education, too, CAPSLO is more than just the homeless program. That gets a lot of the local press on that, but they do manage Head Start programs in 8 counties in the state of California with over 2,000 students. So it's a pretty robust operation. They also do energy efficiency programs for low-income people. And the main thing on the homeless program that has now changed is that is no longer...
This county, which I'm president, had the Holocaust Remembrance Day program, and I think that's about it. All happened this week.
All right. Thank you. Director Muher?
Yes, I attended the LOCAC meeting on Thursday, and I'll try to be brief because Mr. Malcon did quite a nice detailed report. We did hear the sheriff's report, and the big news flash, you should not leave your valuables in your car, and oh yes, lock your car as well. So crimes of opportunity are still on the top of the list. And to add on to that, the sheriff's department, of course, is also battling dangerous drugs in our community. So as citizens, please be aware of this and dispose of any prescription drugs so they do not get into the hands of our youth, which are having difficulty because they are being further led to other illegal activity and drug use. Mr. Gibson did give an update, as was reported. The last of the pipes went into the ground. There was a question from one of the LOCAC members about park land in Los Osos, and Mr. Gibson acknowledged that Los Osos has less park land in comparison to the rest of the county, and that he had said something like the Midtown site would be potentially further developed. I'm not sure about how that could be done, but questions from the public prompted Mr. Gibson to reiterate the county's reluctance to provide additional funding for conservation to go beyond 50 gallons per day per person. He also rejected the idea to extend conservation efforts beyond indoor to outdoor conservation. And of course, we heard the brief introduction from Tricia Knight with the Verizon Wireless property, and you heard the details of that.
Very good. Thank you. All right. So at this time, I'd like to see if there are any items the board would like to pull from the consent agenda. Yeah. Fifth time's a charm. No? With that, do I hear a motion?
We got a public comment.
Sorry.
I catch on
I
that.
Missed it. Oh, well. Yeah, I know. So with that, I'd like to open up public comment for items on the administrative and committee reports and the consent agenda.
Hi, Lynette Tornatsky-Los Osos. I'm commenting on the general manager's report, which I found rather fascinating and very well done. And she brought up something that hadn't seen the light of day in years, which we also discussed tonight on the budget issue, which was to determine anomalies, payout requirements, and repayment of inappropriate use of bond reserves of $714,000, research and review documents regarding this action prior to bankruptcy filing, and review and research interfund loans from solid waste and water to the wastewater project prior to the bankruptcy filing. This has been quite a contentious issue, quite a lot of controversy. I'm hoping the board will support Ms. Kively in continuing sleuthing to find out where all that money went. For instance, in April of 2006, the CSD collected about $1,600,000 in property taxes and bond assessment payments. Of that, $1,470,000 was to be restricted to use to make those payments. By June of 2006, there was less than $500,000 in account 1012, and account 1011 had the water and fire reserves of $816,000. Where did those funds go? We all know the CSD didn't have the bond payment for the money on September 6, 2006, and it was paid out of the trust fund account number 1017. We were supposed to pay it back a year later, but as we can see from our budget, $25,000 a year, we're still paying on that thing. And another note, the CSD lost the interest revenues from holding that tax and bond money that we used to be able to do. I think it was around $68,000 a year that we lost because that board could not seem to make its payments. It spent the money elsewhere. So I just hope Ms. Kively will continue to do her sleuthing and find out what went so terribly wrong in 2006. Thanks.
Thank you. Seeing...
Julie Tacker, and I'm here to speak to the here and now, because I was there. I didn't see on the general manager's report Margaret's report. She talked about how staff is out in the field helping the sewer contractors with hydrant installation. I'm not sure what a hydrant has to do with the sewer, but maybe they moved some for sewer lines. But my real question is, because I've been noticing around town, water meters and valves are being put at the pump stations, and I'm curious how many there are, and I recall it's somewhere in the neighborhood of a dozen or so that would... Did we estimate what kind of revenue that's going to bring? What kind of rate? Do we give a government rate to the sewer? It is the prohibition zone people that have to pay for any water that goes through those meters. And just for your knowledge, Golden State is also installing meters for sewer use. And one of the ones that I have the most heartburn over is irrigating the Broderson site. 8 acres of habitat restoration with potable water is insane. With the brilliant minds at the county, we could have thought of something else, another way to get those plants established without using the drinking supply that we're all charged to preserve.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen, again, I would just, it brought up a thought to me. the brilliant idea of using potable water to keep habitat restoration going sort of got dropped on Tri-W. So what should be a beautiful habitat restoration is one big eyesore if you haven't gone in and looked at it. And it's because, according to Mr. Gibson, it was a drought year. It was very dry. And I recall earlier at a LOCAC meeting requesting if it was how they were going to maintain it, and he said they were going to be using trucks to spray water on it. So you can't have it both ways. If they're going to work on a place where nobody goes, yet the middle of town didn't get watered, it's... This is just one more signal that this project has gone awry. The other issues, in the report, I wondered if I could find out why the general manager attended the Board of Supervisors meeting. We've been over this a few times. If she were up speaking for the, you know, CSD on issues that we would should be talking to the county about, I would be very proud to see her there. But otherwise, I think that there's it's live-streamed, and I don't really see the purpose of spending many hours sometimes waiting for the public comment to come forward. And then, you know, I have to take issue with whether that's a clear report. At the very end, there's comments like meeting with staff regarding various projects. I think if she could go back and look what a manager's report used to look like, that would be a good direction to come back and keep doing that. Those were informative. This telling us everything that you know, every single thing that you did was kind of a waste of your time, I think, to put so much into it. And then one thing that the LOCAC report, both discussions about that meeting, I really do hope that we can get the sustainability group, the LOCAC, and hopefully Rob Miller to sit down and look at our options with ISJ futures. It isn't a matter of talking about this. We spent almost 7 years, I believe, with the ISJ. Meanwhile, the saltwater keeps moving. I've forgotten it's 10 feet a year, many feet a year. We're in danger. This is, you know, the discussion of the drought just makes it more serious for us to get on this as fast as we can. And then another issue is Tuesday evening next week, Los Osos Flow is going to have a meeting about the buyout of Golden State. This has been brought before you before it was presented at LOCAC. I would hope that you all attend and we look into that issue. It's at 6:30 on the 6th. Thank you.
Thank you.
Keith Swanson. Regarding the Finance Committee meeting, and I'm glad that Mr. Storm recognized that this was a draft in front of you, and the purpose of a draft is so that you analyze it, you look at it, and you make recommendations to fix it. There's a lot of problems with it. One of the things I didn't hear in the discussion that I think you need to look at is spending. If you look at the FTEs, okay, it wasn't a good thing for this district, but it's done. The audits. We've had two audits, clean audits. All of a sudden, we're in the panic that there's something wrong. There's God, oh God, we got to do these things to me. And then the 2012-2013 budget, I have a copy of it. It doesn't come to that number at all. I don't get it. I don't know where this is coming from. I don't understand the premise or the objective of complete creating chaos. But this isn't that difficult. You've got to stop spending. You've got to come resolve the solid waste fund, what you're going to do with those reserves. But it should not go to admin, and you should not, to the detriment of the fire department, draw any more money than is needed. And by saying revenue as being the way to gauge that is unfair. Because sure, they have a lot of money, but this district doesn't spend a lot of time administering the fire department.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Richard Margetson. First of all, with respect to Lynette's comments, it's interesting she was able to read those tonight, but I haven't heard her voice any of those in the Finance Committee, and as far as I'm concerned, there's very little truth to anything she said. You know, with respect to the Finance Committee and the Board as a whole, I think it's a issue of not being able to admit your weaknesses. And your weakness as a board is the finances. It is. It's obvious. It was obvious by the discussion tonight. That's fine. Admit it, but then ask for the appropriate help. I know the water budget, but I don't know how to go out and read do a well reading or do a testing that's required by the state. It's not my area. If it's not your area, ask the questions, even if it seems like it's a stupid question, because what you did tonight, do you actually have any idea what you did tonight by talking about those administrative allocations? Every one of those plans has more administrative allocation coming from the fire department than the water department. Really? And for some reason, you don't grasp the concept that the CAL FIRE contract already has administration built into that, so Phil can administer his full-time firefighters. You haven't approved it as a final yet, but even considering it, you're jumping administrative allocation possibly from a little over 100 to somewhere in the 300,000 range. Good luck getting that next fire engine or vehicle or whatever. And if you think you've had issues before, when this district finds out that that's the direction you're considering going, good luck with public perception and public support for that. It's never going to happen. GM's report. Oh, my God. I don't know how she gets all that done in a day. Why aren't these issues resolved then? So many things on there she does? Well, somebody explain to me then, because it's public knowledge and it's out there now. How did a reserve firefighter check bounce last month? A lousy $200 and some cent, whatever it was, $200 and some reserve firefighter check bounce. That's good for morale, gentlemen. And that's what you've hired, and that's what you've got.
Thank you. All right, seeing no more public comment, I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the board. And just a couple of items, clarification. Now I can't read my writing. The agenda, I work with the general manager and set that, so if you have a problem with the agenda, address it to me. And same with the sheriff. I, as the president, not myself, but as the president, am responsible for the running of the meeting. And thank you, Sheriff's Department, but that was my call. So don't blame our general manager. All right. With that, any other comments? I don't ask for your comments. I ask the board's comments. Thank you. You've now been warned. Thank you. Yes. Okay. Please. Director Ohilski.
I'll move that the board receive and file it.
We don't have
I seconded it. I'm sorry.
Director Moodhart seconded it. Yeah. Okay.
Vice President Wright.
Yes.
Director Moodhart.
Yes.
Director Ohilski. Director Ohilski. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Director Storm.
Yes.
President Baltimore.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Can I have the...
President Baltimore, I'm sorry, I have one more request. Does anybody have an objection if I shut this door behind me?
Yeah.
You do?
No, go ahead. While he shuts the door, can we begin the reading of item 12A, emergency water shortage contingency points, discussion points.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. President and members of the board, Rob Miller is here this evening, and he with Ron Munns will be presenting this report for your review and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, staff, and the public. Committee member Munns is here in support of my efforts and will be helping me with questions and answers as we have we would expect some discussion this evening. If you remember, we discussed this item at your last board meeting as primarily an informational topic. It's also been discussed through several of your committees, and tonight we felt like we wanted to focus the discussion on two primary issues. The first issue is the subject of the triggers, and the second is what we believe is a need for some consultant assistance on analyzing your rates for your water enterprise fund. To start off the discussion, I would like you to refer to part of your staff report, which is labeled Attachment 1, and it is a summary of the climate and water quality triggers that we're proposing. And I'll give you a second to flip to that. For members of the public who may be hearing this for the first time, we did give a more extensive presentation at the last meeting, but we're going to be focused in our discussion this evening. What we're hoping to do tonight is, now that you've heard an informational presentation in a previous meeting, is tonight to take a closer look at this Attachment 1 and a summary of the proposed triggers in light of what's been obviously of, even though we have had some rain, a continuing dry period. And I know there may be some questions specific to some of the triggers. So just to briefly go over the two types of triggers that we have. The first is a climate-based trigger. It's based solely on the level of rainfall that we measure here in the district. And it's independent of the condition of our wells. For instance, if we have a very wet 5 years and the wells are doing fine, if we are then followed up by a very dry period as we've had, these triggers would come into play based on rainfall only. Also, given the last 3 years of relatively dry conditions, you can anticipate that when this is enacted, depending on how that is done, you could start the clock from year one on the date that it's enacted and then look to employ these triggers in future years. Or you could say, we're going to look back at 3 years of rainfall, and then when you enact this these emergency measures, you would drop
yourself. Excuse me, Mr. Miller. Yeah. Ms. Tacker, I've been very tolerant of your discussion since Chief Veneris. Your voice carries in this room. Please, either next door in the other room or outside. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
So in any case, you'd have the choice of either restarting the climate clock, so to speak, and looking at rainfall and going forward, or if you were to look at the last 3 years, you would drop yourself immediately into stage four, a water shortage, just based on rainfall. So that's one type of climate-based trigger. As we said last time, the advantages of this is it is forward-looking in terms of drought conditions. The disadvantage is it may not correlate to conditions in our wells exactly, because those are based on the overall condition in the groundwater basin. The second set of triggers are based on actual measured water quality in two of our wells, the 8th and the 10th Street well, and those triggers are intended to monitor and trigger based on evidence of seawater intrusion in those fairly inland wells. We've already seen evidence of seawater intrusion in our library well, also known as our Palisades well, and that's why we had to adjust the zone that we take from in that well. But we've not seen that evidence in 8th and 10th Street, and these triggers would be keyed to the presence of salt showing up in those wells. So that's a broad restatement of what we talked about last time in terms of the triggers set position. We felt that it was necessary to receive some consultant assistance in analyzing your revenue needs with respect to not only your needs for capital improvements, implementation of basin plan objectives, but also in terms of these recommended emergency response measures. The staff report is written perhaps a little differently than what you might see in a typical staff recommendation for a rate study, which is send out a proposal, get the numbers and the proposals back, select a rate consultant. Our feeling is that our approach here at the district requires more interaction with the local resources we have here, both from a financial analysis perspective and from a project analysis perspective. We have very active and knowledgeable committees. It was our thought that instead of just hiring a rate study consultant out of hand, we pursue qualifications for somebody who's both qualified to speak to drought management measures, surcharges, penalties, those sorts of things, but also shows strong, a strong bent to work with our committee structure in providing an interactive approach to this rate study. And so we would propose to merely look at qualifications and do just an initial contract for $5,000 so the consultant that we feel is most qualified can come and meet with our committees, review all our information, look at the work that we think we can handle here locally, and to try to limit those scope items to only that which we really need in an attempt to moderate the cost of this study, which can be substantial. So that was our approach, and I know that's not without discussion tonight. So that concludes my comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Get some water.
Start off.
Okay, Vice President Wright.
Okay, in regards to the triggers, okay, you're asking us to establish the triggers but not pull the triggers. They're basic.
Yes, for the purpose of understanding, particularly with respect to the rate consultant, what we're going to be facing in this program, it would be helpful to know whether we're going to be dropping into it right away or whether this is going to be something that we're going to set up for a future condition. So we do think that would be helpful this evening if the board's prepared to do that.
Now, these rate triggers, are they unique to us, or is it like a community our size with similar situations percentage-wise? Like, you know, or is it pretty unique to us?
These triggers are actually taken from the city of Santa Cruz, I believe, as one, or modeled after them. And there are certainly other communities that use climate-based triggers for different conservation events. Our situation may be a little unique in that our groundwater basin is perhaps more substantial than some like maybe Cambria, who have a very shallow basin, and when they have a dry year, they are forced into a fairly immediate issue. I don't pretend to be an expert on Cambria, but I know that their basin responds more quickly to climate than perhaps ours does.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Director Holsky.
Before I start my questions, I'd like to just reiterate what I said before, that the Financial Advisory Committee recommended that we go with the consultant on a 2-to-1 recommendation. I have some questions about the triggers as to follow up on Mike, if I could. I mean, I admit this is a serious problem, and nobody can deny that. The question I had is a couple, and I think you alluded to the first one. I know, and I use Cambria as the example, their primary water source is surface runoff. So I just have a hard time in my mind seeing the direct correlation between the rainfall trigger and the water quality trigger. Can you explain that a little bit more, please?
It is a leading indicator, perhaps a far leading indicator. The one thing that our groundwater quality model doesn't do well is model very short periods of time. You know, what's going to happen in a 3-year duration of drought? We really don't have that capability. So we're looking at water levels, we're looking at water quality. So I don't think staff has a good handle on exactly what the conditions in your 8th and 10th Street wells would be expected to be if a 2-year, 3-year, 4-year drought. The thought was you'd have some triggers that would be reactionary and some triggers that would be predictive, and the rainfall triggers are predictive.
Okay. I guess this is my Craig left, so are you in charge?
Yes.
Okay, Mike. This question, I know this is probably more of a staff question, but when I read the staff report, there's a sentence in there that says, if climate-based triggers are implemented, the district will enter into stage 4 condition immediately upon adoption of the plan. The question is, We're not adopting the plan tonight. All we're doing is giving direction. My understanding is that the plan itself would actually be implemented after we got this consultant on by PUC. So if we put in the rainfall triggers, and is PUC going to be receptive to that as far as Golden State goes, or do you have any feeling on that?
I do have a general feeling based on what's happened in other communities. PUC has historically wanted to see, they've been more reactive than proactive. They've wanted to see documented shortages of supply and physical evidence of that shortage before allowing mandatory conservation. And, you know, times might be changing, and if we presented a compelling case, that may change, but that's been their general trend, as it's been explained to me by the state.
That leads to one more, and then I'll try to stop. But so that wouldn't preclude Golden State from having voluntary conservation measures, even though they couldn't apply mandatory ones, which had rate increases. They could still go ahead and, for lack of a better term, recommend voluntary or send out voluntary, conservation measures to their users?
I'm certain they can encourage users to conserve water. Whether there's a formal reduction they can ask for, we're asking everybody to reduce water use by 15%. That one may also be regulated by the PUC. I'm a little uncertain on that.
Yeah, where I'm coming from on my concern in this regard is I don't want us to be carrying a full burden of the. I'm sorry. That's because I'm talking about our district. I don't want our district to be carrying a full burden of this without the Golden State users having to buy into the process. And that's a concern to me, that I want to make sure all the people in the basin are sharing in this equally. So with that, I'll try to stop for now. But those are my only questions for now, Craig.
Director Storm, thank you.
As you know, I'm still new, so I'm going to ask a couple of basic questions. Now, as I understand it, there's a series of aquifers, upper and lower. And so when we have these rainfall triggers, about how long, if it is known, does it take for the rain to get to where we can draw drinking water from?
That's an excellent question. certainly our upper zone, there are areas where there's a fairly direct connection to surface rainfall. In our lower zone, it is believed that the primary two sources are leakage through a fairly thick clay layer, which can take years, and recharge from Los Osos Creek, which is a bit more direct but focuses some of those water supplies on the east side of our community. Another reason to build wells on the east side, closer to the recharge. So I would say if you took it on the whole, our basin is not terribly responsive in an immediate sense to rainfall. It would take a number of years to see that response occur.
But that's going to be, in any event, it's not going to appear out of nowhere, so that's going to be an upper cap on what's ultimately going to get down there.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And so I know you've been working on this for a long time, and so these are just questions for my own information and anybody else who's not a groundwater expert yet. But my understanding, too, is that these chemical triggers, they're affected by the intrusion of seawater, which the seawater gets a higher pressure in the ground, in the dirt, and it pushes up on the freshwater. And so that can tell us, the differential there can tell us how much we're overdrafting to take water out to drink. And so that seems like that's a pretty good measure. And I think you alluded to the fact that maybe what's going on is that by the time we measure those, it's kind of too late, whereas we know, now you're saying maybe years in advance with the rain, we'll know roughly that it's going to be bad or good. So that's why we're mixing the two kinds.
That was the philosophy, yes. I like the way you described the upward pressure that seawater has on freshwater. I think that's a good description. Just know that for these chloride triggers, it's not just that pressure. It's actually the physical molecules of seawater reaching the well and being pulled in the sample. A very small percentage of seawater. I mean, seawater's 30,000 milligrams per liter TDS, 15,000 chloride, but we're measuring molecules when we're hitting these triggers.
But once that happens, it's coming and
it's there.
Okay, so then that leads into my last question is, why not have and I'm sure you have a good answer. I'm just, again, I'm kind of a little bit in the dark, and I've been reading voraciously to catch up on all this stuff. Why then not have the chemistry triggers on level 1 and 2? Is it just because these are more, like you say, reactive?
That is why. If you look at some of the water quality information in attachment 2, if you flip the page, you'll notice that, let me give you an example. In our 8th Street well, glasses have to go on for this part.
I think I understand. All right.
Okay. Yeah, no,
thank you very much.
Excellent questions.
Dr. Moonhart?
Maybe if you could, Rob, is to expand on the expectations of the consultant. What product are we trying to find from them?
In defining what we would rather not have from them would be the very thick, you know, conventional rate study. We're really looking for somebody who brings detailed experience on setting drought contingency plan rates, surcharges, and penalties, who can look at our distribution of use in the various tiers and help us predict if this is, I know it's difficult, but help us predict based on their experience what kind of revenue shortfalls we would actually see. A lot of rate study involves looking at all your expenses. It's more of a financial exercise. We're not looking so much for that. We're looking for them to tell us how much money might we expect to lose, how do we best position ourselves to meet that challenge, how do we incorporate our capital improvements effectively, and deal with some of the inflationary pressures that we've had. So it's more of a focus on those issues.
Okay. I'm just going to interrupt here real quick because it goes off to this question. In your experience, is there how many people or how many companies could do that you know of?
Yeah, I think there'd definitely be a handful that we could get to propose, okay. Not just one. So we'd expect to see some interest and competition, mm-hmm. We'd hope.
And then the relationship, you mentioned the committee, working with the committee. So are we talking about the committee of you and Ron, or are we talking about the entire committee, or, I mean, how does staff fit into that?
If we had everything we wanted, we'd perhaps have a representative out of finance and UAC to help us. Uh-huh. Or we can work separately with both committees. But whatever committee members are the most knowledgeable in these sorts of things, we tap their experience to hopefully limit our financial commitment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Director Holsky.
Yeah, to follow up on that, because we had a really detailed conversation at Financial Advisory about that. Mm-hmm. And I think and Rob didn't go into a great amount of detail in the first part of this, the selection process and the pre-qualification process. But I think maybe if you could just go through how you see the process unfolding from the beginning and why you think the $5,000 is adequate, I think that would help explain to everybody because, you know, we talked about this as a $70,000 study, but we're only paying $5,000. So I think if you could do that short synopsis of what you did at the FAC would be helpful.
Right. Often we see when we go out to requests for proposals and they produce a detailed scope and the larger fee, they don't have enough time to dig into the details of what we really need to be able to limit their scope. They think, well, we better give them everything because we don't really know what we're working with. So the thought was 2 steps, select the most qualified consultant. You know, we're going to look at hourly rates as part of that qualification process, but not scope and overall fee. Select the most qualified as a statement of qualifications type process. Retain them for $5,000 to come and meet with our committees, review the scope that we actually need, review our older rate study, budgets, condition of everything that we're doing. Provide at that point their initial feedback. Here's the 3 times they've done the drought contingency. Here's the lessons learned that they went through. Here's what they think you might be looking at in terms of revenue shortfalls based on their initial thoughts. Get as much information as you can from their most senior person for that $5,000, and then work with them to see what additional scope is needed to hone in on the answers, and ask them not to produce a 50-page report. We want a more focused look. So that's the theory. We trust they'll be willing to do that, and we're going to make that clear that that's our intent. So that's what we hope to get.
That's what I really appreciated when you gave that presentation on financial advisory, because it makes sense. This is really a sequential or a tiered process. So we are going to get maximum value for this $5,000.
Okay. How long do we expect? I mean, how long will we have to postpone or extend out our process of getting our contingency plan?
Yeah, we did. That was a good question from FAC as well.
We're using the climate trigger. Which trigger or any trigger would we be at?
I think we'd be in at least stage four, depending on.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. With that, I would like to open up public comment.
Keith Weimer, Lazo Sustainability Group. I wanted to thank Rob and Ron for doing such a great job on this. And I do have some concerns. I don't know if your question, Mr. Baltimore, was getting at this, but I think we could probably just do away with the stage one. This basin has already been shown for 35 years to be overdrafted. We still have large pumping depressions. Seawater intrusion will continue as long as that's occurring. So why are we talking in terms of a possible emergency and stages of emergency? Why don't we just acknowledge that we have a long-lasting problem that we have to solve? We have to reverse seawater intrusion and just shoot for a target that is lower than stage one, lower water use than stage one. It should be, we should never get above stage two, and I am sure that something below 50 gallons, well, something below 60 gallons per person per day is achievable, and I believe that it can go lower than that. Now, that means indoor and outdoor, and I think that's what we have to get to, because given this drought and our situation, I believe we're going to have to acknowledge that, climate change and our problem is here to stay. We need to just go directly at this thing and quit talking in terms of, someday going back to a non-emergency state. We need to get the basin to a place where it has some resilience, where it can weather, a long-term climate, change, so that we don't have any reserves. The basin plan says we do not have any excess freshwater capacity in our basin. We are vulnerable to seawater intrusion at all times, except for this upper aquifer. And the upper aquifer is going to be impacted. It's impacted by the drought, of course. It's going to be impacted by the Los Angeles wastewater project. And it's going to be impacted because purveyors want to ship more pumping up there. So we don't have any extra. We need to focus on that. I support the rate study for sure, but when you do the rate study, do away with Tier 1, possibly Tier 2, Stage 2, and also focus on considering more than just rates. And also consider incentives and what's possible if you implement a conservation program with incentives. In other words, we don't want to use just the rates as a hammer. We want to also have a carrot. And that's why we're suggesting that you should maximize the Los Angeles Wastewater Project $4 million and add on an outdoor conservation program. That way you can allow people a means of reducing their water use, to down to below 60 gallons per person per day.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Julie Tacker again, and as far as the triggers go, I say we go with whichever comes first. So if whichever comes first, you figure it out. I am curious how staffing a water policeman, how do you do that? Is there someone that when the rain doesn't come that you call them to come on? Or are these staff members that are already busy already all day now going to take on a new duty to go out and police the water or even do the calculation of whether or not someone has met the trigger for penalty? When we're talking about all of this, money and water are synonymous. And we're talking about a rate increase to cover the cost of, I guess, this water policeman and anything associated with that. But when, you know, I'm not at these triggers. We don't use a lot of water at our house. And if everybody does what they need to be doing, we're not going to hit the penalties. So, and maybe that's what this rate expert's going to figure out, is when do or what usage that we all have to pay enough to operate the system. It's heartburn over buying shower heads when we're already buying shower heads and aerators and that. With both, you got two hands in my pockets, the wastewater project and the water companies. So slow green build is going to encourage all of us to reuse those septic systems and put in pumps or whatever it takes to use that water for irrigation outside. And they're only a year away from implementing that public relations campaign.
All right. Thank you.
Lindy Owen, I was kind of curious, at the utilities meeting we did talk about also looking at the rate increase that is coming anyway, and I wondered if these are going side by side, because it's the drought ordinance would hit the rates as we need to be setting them up in the future for the already obvious shortage of revenue. And just a reminder that it's not the water that costs money, it's the infrastructure and maintenance and reserves to keep a safe water supply. And then I was reminded again with the Slow Green Build project, they, in early conversations, they actually did suggest that this treated water could come back. And one suggestion that they agreed with was that the main line that will be going out on Highland out to Broderson to hopefully be able to dispose of some 250 or 300,000 gallons out of the million that we have to find a home for, that there was an opportunity to maybe bring that water into the septic tanks and have them be more holding tanks with pumps that would take for outdoor irrigation. So there are some options, and maybe that's something that should be looked at as a possibility. Because if you think about it, losing 5,000 leach fields, we're losing trees, we're going to lose even disbursement of that water. I think the problem is bigger, and when you talk about drought measures, a lot of it is these bladders and ways of holding water before it's all evaporated away. And so, again, maybe the bigger issue would also be to expand a little bit on alternative options as we go, not to complicate it too much, but to keep in mind that there, as we look at this drought future that we have ahead, I'm afraid, to look at widening the scope of where we're going to get emergency water from. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Richard Margetson. The first, or actually the last rate study, when it established the capital improvement reserve draw each year. It was based on where the budget was in that year that we did the rate study. And that budget ran a surplus. And that's how we established those reserve numbers. Now, since that year, 2 years ago, salaries and benefits have gone up significantly in the water fund. I think you've got an issue here where you've got to look at all components of the revenue stream for the district and what's causing the shortfall. Because if Rob talked about if one of these triggers is implemented and you have that reduction, you're going to have that reduction in revenue. But each one of those triggers after stage one have a penalty phase associated with it. Stage three and four, it's four times the rate is the penalty. So if somebody doesn't reduce completely, where's the break-even point of how much revenue is lost compared to how much revenue is gained? I think that's got to be part of the equation. Because currently, of the 235,000 units billed in the residential category last fiscal year, roughly a sixth of that, 40,000 units, were billed at the $7.07 rate. If you do a rate increase for whatever reason or whatever justification, just a regular rate increase to produce more revenue, that tier will go up. You will have that reduction by the ordinance, but then the quadrication. Those have all got to come into this equation before you even start talking about it. You should reconvene the subcommittee, at least for one meeting, and have them review where they were and where we are now. Because the first year, gentlemen, we were within $5,000 of meeting the revenue goal with the first 12% increase. And we don't know where we are this year, but that's pretty close to margin of error.
Thank you. All right. Seeing no more public comment, I'll turn it back to the board. And Mr. Miller, are there any points you'd like to address?
Just a few brief ones. Keith Weimer was talking about the elimination of stage one. We did think about that in some detail and got some good feedback from Ron. The feeling was it was important to have, even if there's a stage that you never get out of in our lifetimes, it's important to have a stage that's voluntary so you can indicate that, yes, we are into that first stage of our water shortage plan, but I understand there's a policy issue there. Outdoor rebates would be a great thing to see in the community. Julie Tacker asked about water police staffing. The hope is that a rate and penalty-based approach where the software would do that for you could limit staff time. But it's something that we are going to want that senior person to give us some thinking as far as what they've seen in other communities on the implementation side. I think it's important we not lose sight of that. And then Lindy Owens was asking about a rate increase. Is this the same one that you'd have to do anyways because your revenue is short this year? I think the answer to that is yes. We would look at not just this, but basin plan projects, current rate needs, as well as the emergency shortage plan. And then Richard referring to the need of a breakpoint analysis. And I think that's where we're hoping the expertise in the industry can really come and shine. If they come and tell us, hey, our guess is as good as yours, then we know we don't have to go too far beyond the 5,000 for that particular element. But at least we'll know that we've reached out to the right consultant qualified. Those are all my comments.
All right. Thank you. Come back to the board for discussion.
Can I make some comments here?
Sure. It's part of the discussion.
Yeah.
yeah. You might be sitting down and standing up, so however you want to get comfortable.
so I think I know that we had talked about the penalty issue that Mr. Margerson brought up, and I think one of the comments I believe, Ron, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you said it's one of those things you just can't count on as far as a penalty. as revenue, because your goal, of course, is to avoid that at all costs. That's the threat of it. It was brought up about slow green build, and yeah, it's true that they are doing that, but my one fear with them after talking with, and I can't remember the fellow's last name, Josh at one of the environmental landscape places. He's working with, Carmichael Environmental. I talked to him, and he said that, you know, that he's working with Slow Green Build on that project. My one fear would be that because it's directed by the county, it's going to be very focused and maybe not as broad in terms of outdoor use and all those things. So it's just one element of it, and I'm hoping, and what I get from our committee is that we want to expand that as much as we can, and have get as much public education out there. Everything, a lot of this always comes back to public education. And then the last comment I want to make, because Rob, I think you covered everything else, is that we're talking about extraordinary times. This isn't business as normal or business as usual. I think that's a paradigm we have to get over. I mean, if we're going into an emergency situation here, I mean, unfortunately, our normal and emergency are merging, especially when it comes to finances and water at the same time. But we are talking about something that's not normal, and there's going to have to be. It's even hard for me to think we're going in, not even me, but just to, for anybody to think that we're going into stage four just to start with. That's kind of blows your mind a little bit, because there's some severe parameters in that. So I just want to throw that out there as far as, it's very serious what we're talking about. It's very important stuff, and we have to think about this as a board. We got some tough decisions.
Okay. Just as the board discussed, I just want to remind everybody that this is a water shortage ordinance. It's not a drought ordinance. So one of the advantage of the climate is that addresses.
Authorize the expenditure of the $5,000 and have these trigger discussion come back to us as a result of that consultant's initial analysis. That's where I'm coming down on this.
Okay. Quick question to clarify that to Mr. Miller. Would a rate consultant, the people that you imagine who are going to respond to the RFQ, would they need a board direction for triggers, or could they do this without a board direction for triggers and then make recommendations on the triggers?
I think they could do it without a board recommendation on triggers. We can say, we're not sure where exactly we're going with these. We could either jump right into it, or it could phase in over time and help us understand the differences. I think we could do that.
Well, I'd like to hear you say we can confidently do that.
I'm confident.
Okay.
We can do that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
The question along that line, Rob, is, so in other words, the consultant can take these triggers as, for lack of a better word, talking points that incorporate their product in evaluate your trigger points that these do work, or you can tweak them, or you know what I'm saying?
Or even come up with additional options.
Option. I mean, you could say, you know, these are viable, or maybe you guys should, you know, look at it this way. Is that part of the process?
I think so. And the one helpful thing for staff is to hear from the board that these triggers are not a done deal, that this is something we're still looking carefully at. You know, from the last meeting, folks might have thought, oh, well, they're fine, you know, let's go forward. So it's good. I think it's helpful to hear that we need to very carefully look at them as we go and hold them with an open hand. So, no, I think it's helpful.
Okay. And just real quick with that, as Director Muthart accurately, this is very serious. So I just want to see if Mr. Munns has anything he wants to say or add.
Sorry.
Except that it's past my bedtime.
No.
Thank you.
How's
out the door now? I think the questions we got were great. Just to backtrack just a little bit, I think there is opportunity, maybe this would address some of your concerns, Leonard, about more discussion with the county about programs and what they envision, and because I think we haven't had that discussion yet to see where our vision is, especially out of the Utility Advisory Committee, and where they're going. So I think we need some more dialogue there, because there could be a lot of cost share that might address Julie's concern. Kind of what I'm seeing here, I think this is great. I think what we need is that we use this as a framework, the triggers we're looking at. And again, we use that word framework so we can allow the consultant to do what they need to do and provide us recommendations of, yeah, that's good, no, maybe you want to do this or that. The bottom line, and something I did want to say towards the end of this, is, you know, this is going to be a process. We don't know how long it will take, and we are in a very severe situation. So what I'd like to see is us maybe take some action. Going back to the discussions with Golden State and where we can go. And my recollection, it's been a while since I've read Rule 14.1, which the IOUs operate under. But I think voluntary measures can be implemented without PUC approval. But we need to check that. So if we can do voluntary measures and really get the community in tune with the message, we got to get the messaging going. Because as much as we talk about it, and you know, a lot of us, all of us in this room know, there's a lot of people out there that don't know, that I talk to, that don't understand what's going on. So what I'd really like to, for us to go away from here is with some sort of action plan, minus mandatory rationing or water shortage plan, that we really take some action now. Because we've been talking an awful lot. And by the time we get anything back to this board, it could be past middle of summer or so. So realistically, we're going to miss the summer season probably here, unless we do something. So.
Right. And just don't go too far away. Because one of the things I'd like the board to consider is that we don't, again, in the urgency of it, don't necessarily have this come back to the board, but we might give direction for the general manager with the agreement, basically let Mr. Miller, Mr. Munns, and the general manager select the person of the RFQ and not have it come back to the board. So I just want to kind of put that out there, and I don't know if that would be agreeable I'm putting you on the spot, basically.
Yeah, yes, I think that would be perhaps with the addition if there is another...
add the selection, just...
So I think the selection can be left to Rob. I mean, we would take his recommendation anyway. If you want to go ahead and you could add a board member to that, like Leonard and Rob and Ron, the three of them in consultation, I would be fine with that if you want to set that up that way.
Okay. Do I have a second to the motion?
We got it. Does Leonard accept that?
Yeah, I'll accept that.
Well, I'll second that because I agree that the word framework should be in there. I think that's exactly what these triggers are at this point, is a framework. And I think, what we have now, the water situation is the new normal. Emergency is the new normal, not just for us, but for, a lot of people, especially in the West. So I'll second that motion.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote.
Director Uhielski?
Yes.
Vice President Wright?
Yes.
President Muthart?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Mr. Muthart.
Director
Storm?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes. Now, before we go back to Director Uhielski's second there, I'm just going to ask our counsel to closely monitor us to make sure that we can discuss whatever he wants to discuss.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even think of that.
Well, in terms of discussing, yes. Can you take action? Depends on what the action is.
No. So I'm going to closely monitor you because...
I know what time it is. I know when we extended past 10, I was going to set the limit of 10:30, but I think where I was going to go with that, and I think if Ron and Rob, I know they've already got a lot of stuff on their table, but that three people that we just discussed for the previous, if they want to go ahead and get some analysis going on that and bring it back to us for final action at our next meeting, that's where I was going to go with that.
All right. I don't think that's discussion. I think that's a good idea. But it's not an action.
No, that's why I, it's direction, I guess. You would appoint the committee, I guess.
What are we bringing back?
Everything.
The whole.
The whole gelato.
All right.
Just about the 14.1 and what we can do as far as mandatory measures.
Mr. Seitz, are we within our...
You can give direction for something to come back for action.
Okay. All right. All right. With that, I'd like to close item... Yes.
It's direction. I'm just...
Direction.
We're all,
direction. So we give you direction as noted by Director Wohilski.
You guys got it?
Okay.
See, that,
clear as mud.
That's what you get for missing your nighttime here. You get more work.
I'm going to close item 12A and item 13. We didn't have any pulled consent items, so now any future agenda items the board would like to recommend?
I got one that comes up out of with the Emergency Services Committee, and I know there was a discussion about at one point in time, we missed a payment to CAL FIRE, and so therefore we do not make the payment to CAL FIRE. We pay the county to, and there's an administrative fee attached. And I'd like to see something brought back to us that we could eliminate that, or, you know, however that works.
Yes. What has to happen is there has to be agreement from the county to allow us to take care of the contract on our own. So there would need to be some research done. Not a problem with doing that if you'll just give me some time to work through the process.
Like next meeting? No.
Yeah, you know better than that.
Could you just, you know, is it roughly 10%? Is what the what is the at?
I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I'd have to look that up because I'm not. I haven't looked at that figure. But yes, I will. There is, like I said, there is some research I'm going to have to do because apparently there's a couple general managers before me that tried this and it did not go over very well. So let me look into it and get some more information.
Maybe the fact that we're out of bankruptcy might.
I'm hoping so.
So is there an agenda item for me to consider?
Well, it's more of an action item for staff.
Yeah.
Okay. Any agenda items for me to consider?
Yes.
Yes.
I think we should either.
Director Storm.
I think we should either commit to at our next general meeting taking the extra time in closed session to complete the personnel recommendations or come back for a special meeting for that because it's been going on for a while and I know that if it was me, I'd want to have my evaluation completed and know what I needed to do going forward.
Maybe we'll just have a special section just to close it. So we'll investigate either earlier starting time or another special session to address it. Good point. Any other items? Items for me to consider for the agenda?
Not an agenda, but I would like to make it known that I am not going to be...
Serve applications, will serves that have been granted, and...
That's an excellent point, and that's actually an ongoing item for the UAC, and we'll just move it on up.
Yeah, we actually handed out the current policy to the UAC last week and asked them to familiarize themselves with it, and I think with our current budget thing, we won't be talking about CIP. We'll be talking about...
Well, I don't want to get into a discussion of a non-agenda item, but also that's... isn't that going the standard well-served letter issue? Isn't that part of that, too?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. With that, no further agenda items, then closing comments by board members.
That one,
go with Director Wohilski first.
Well, no, you're not anxious. You go. No, this follows tag teams on what we just talked about. We were originally talking about scheduling a community workshop/information session on May 15th about the water. For a multitude of reasons, that date did not work out, including the day after that is the chamber event. So now Leonard just told me that he's not going to be there, but we are rescheduling that event for June 19th, Thursday the 19th. So more information will be forthcoming. But I apologize, Leonard. Until just now, I didn't know you weren't going to be here.
It's okay. It can't be avoided.
All right, Director Storm, any comments? Director Muthart.
No, I not specifically. Thank you, everyone, for such good conversation today.
Vice President Wright.
I'd just like to remind people in regards to the CAL FIRE chipping day, actually days, Monday, May 19th through May 22nd. If you didn't get a door hanger, you can contact the Station 15. They'll set things up for you. And they've been doing a really, really good job in the community with the chipping events and helping knock down our fuel load. So thank you.
All right. And I would just, again, like to thank the public on a hot night for working with us and running a nice meeting. And like I said, for the people who come in here to make comments and present the fracking issue, hope you can stay around for a minute or two and I can talk to you for a minute. So with that, can you adjourn?
I'm sorry. Could I just add one thing? I hate that.
You just can't. Go ahead, Director.
I just wanted people to know that Mr. Clift is here too. So if you want to talk to him, he's available and most likely be here next month too.
Thank you. Good comment. All right. Me adjourned.